Hello, and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 150, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me, as always, are the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
You're a daisy if you do.
What the fuck the hell? What's happening now? Is it a catchphrase every week now?
That's a line from Tombstone.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. And as you can also hear, our very own Doc Holliday, it's Mr. Tony Esmond.
Oh, nice. I like that one.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah.
Would he be White Earp then?
Well, probably.
Yeah.
I'm going to grow my own White Earp moustache.
You'd suit that, actually. I think you should do
that.
Yeah. If you think it should suit the moustache, then write in.
Yeah. Just to explain, folks, we were just talking about the 1990... What year was it? Six? Five? Four?
Yeah.
Yeah. The great film Tombstone. Yeah. So that's why Dan's put us off with a little bit of Tombstone knowledge.
But yes, watch White Earp.
What?
Yeah, I like that.
The Kevin Costner one?
Yeah, I like Costner.
Yeah, but White Earp's like so long, isn't it? It's a very slow film. Although the classic scene of when White Earp takes out loads of people is brilliantly done, I thought.
Yeah, we should watch Postman along with that, shouldn't we?
Really?
Oh, fuck me, I had that on DVD and I gave it away. I just bought it blind and then it's like, oh no, I can't be dealing with this. The one bit at the end is in slow motion when he rides up and grabs the letter out of the kid's hand. I was fucking roaring with laughter. So cheesy.
We could watch Waterworld as well.
Yeah.
Do you just want to watch Kevin Costner films? Is that all you want to do?
Yeah. Tin Cup.
Oh, that's a deep cut.
Untouchables.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. The slow-mo gunfight in the railway station. Anyway, the comic podcast.
Anyway, yes. Back to the Kevin Costner podcast.
The Costner cast.
Yes.
No, but this is the Awesome Comics podcast. And like I said, it's episode 150. Somehow we've made it to 150. I mean, we've done a few more episodes if you include our specials. But if you're talking the original numbering,
it's 150.
And we're not that far off 3 years, are we? I think it's 3 years. Is it July?
I think July. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Time flies, doesn't
it? Yeah. To answer a question that's coming later. Fuck me. How do we do that?
I know. Yeah. Yes, because it's episode 150. We had a few ideas. Like bouncing around, some of them were going to be an awful lot of hard work.
Others, who's that at the door?
Others less so. And then we decided let's throw it out to the audience and like the Facebook group, which is Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook. And we threw it out to get some questions, and boy, did we get a response!
Loads, didn't we?
Yeah,
not all of them insulting.
Yeah.
Quite proud of them.
We got some really great questions from that are talking about all different areas of the show and comics in general. So, yeah, we thought, as it's episode 150, it's a Three Amigo show, we're just going to answer some questions, have a good old time, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, the weather's nice. We've all had a nice weekend.
Deadpool.
We've all seen Deadpool 2, which we all enjoyed.
Yeah. We won't talk about it because they don't want to spoil it, but it's good. We liked it.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. It has our seal of approval. And yeah, do you know what else has our... Do you know what else has our seal of approval?
No idea.
Well, as well as your balls, it's comichouse.com.
Yay.
When you're not in a cinema checking out one of the many superhero or comic book films that are coming out pretty much every other week, you probably want to read comics. And if you can't make it to a comic book store, or if you're travelling somewhere, you probably like reading your comics digitally, and Comic House will have you covered there as well. Yes, Comic House is the place to go if you want to get your fix of independent comics. If you go to comichouse.com, you'll find a huge library of them that you can order, like the actual physical copies. And the money also goes to the creators as well, which is brilliant, helps spread the word. And if you also like to read your books digitally, then you should sign up to the Comic House app. More and more people are doing it. More and more people are loving it. We've mentioned a few books on the app on this show in the past, and there's going to be many more in the future, I just know. What have they got on there at the moment? Do we know, guys?
Well, I was reading during the week the Retropunk that was currently the book of the week for the reading club. And
Any
that's good? Really fun. Yeah, it's very much brings back memories of Appleseed, of Masaru Ishiro.
Yeah. Yeah,
the sort of the big robot guy and the kind of feisty young girl. That's interesting. It's really, I'm not sure if the author is Western because it's. I feel like manga has come to a point now where it's very hard to distinguish between the source and like the Eastern stuff and the Western stuff. It's so bang on.
Yeah.
But okay. I think it's having a manga's had a bigger influence over here maybe than vice versa. I guess Jay Gunn would be the man to talk to about that.
He's there now, isn't he?
Yeah. Went to a Comic Con and someone asked him to do a sketch of the game he worked on, Medieval, and he did it.
Yeah,
that's cool. Amazing.
Yeah, that's a great sketch, that is.
I had a look at Abominable Glory again, which is a book I reviewed a couple of years ago, but it's been put on there from Mark Ozier, written by Martin Hayes, art by Chris Ascombe. Very good.
Oh, and nice one.
You seen this one? German army officers fighting the Abominable Snowman. Pretty cool.
No, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Nice.
I got got the latest issue of the Pool List on there as well, with a front cover on Captain Cosmic, which I got through from Andy from the Kickstarter this week.
I haven't had that yet. What's going
on? Really? No. Mine came through on Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
Are you calling him out? Glorious. Are you calling him out, Tony? Yeah. Is that what's happening?
Well, we've had our own woes with the post office, haven't we, with the awesome comic issue one.
Oh, yeah, we have. Yeah.
We had
one got a bit bent, didn't we? So that's getting sent out. Well, will have been sent out this morning as you're listening.
Yeah. Our customer service department is here to help you in any way, shape, or form.
Double backed.
There's one we sent to America, two copies of, and one of them came out in the post because the envelope completely opened up.
So
sent another one over. Bastards. You called them that. And 150 a show.
Sake.
I don't need much editing on this because it's just the three of us.
Yeah,
Dan's
let me down. but like I say, Comic House, they've got plenty of stuff like the Pool List. There's Ritual. Have you seen that? Are you
doing... No.
Yeah, that one looks quite good. I haven't seen that one. It's in Ritual 2, The Resurrection. What else have we got here? We've got Project Luna, Retro Punk, obviously. Nazi Werewolf Zombie Inferno. That's one I know you checked out, wasn't it, Dan?
Yeah, I'm not going to hate on it. I wasn't a massive fan, but you should give it a read to see what you think.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a photo comic, and Doom Lord set the bar high. What can I say?
Oh, God, love a bit of Doom Lord. Anyway, if you want to find out more about the Comic House app, then go to comichouse.com. You can get a 14-day free trial. And the app is only £3 a month for the subscription. Well worth your time and your effort if you want to read some fantastic indie comics. So there you go. Now, it's just the three of us. We're just sat here. We've got our weak lemon drink, our cheesy nibbles, and we're just going to talk some comics and answer some questions. Now, how should we do it? Like, I know, Tony, I've made
a little note of them all. Would you like me to read them out as we go along?
Yeah. You can be the question master, although you're also going to answer them with us.
I have to say, we got upwards of 60 or 70 questions, so we might not get through all of them, and some of them do a little bit double up. Just be aware of that as we go through. And everyone will get a little shout out, but just be aware that they a couple of them do double up, and a couple of them are just, well, our usual questions, which we thank you for. But
thank you to everyone who jumped on board and asked us some questions and just generally just got involved, because it was a surprise and we really appreciated it. And I think in the future maybe the group is the way to go to ask for responses.
I think so.
Thank you very much. So how do we want to start? Well, Tony, take it away. Let's kick this off.
Let's go question one, which came from Dave Hingley. And he asked, any tips for working on anthologies?
Oh, in what context? Did he say what context?
He says, how about how to get your book printed and sold at conventions? Have you ever done anything like that before? No, I think we'll stay with the first bit. Any tips to work on anthologies? I've got one.
Go on.
Have fun.
Yeah.
Keep it short. Most anthologies will go between, I'm going to say, one page and six pages. Generally, I know we're slightly different. Most anthologies are sort of one and done, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's sort of like a one-off story. So think about a short story you got to tell, and keep it tight, I would say.
Yeah.
And keep it on point. There's no room in an anthology story to sort of fanny around or go off topic or anything like that. So keep it tight.
Yeah.
And give it a start and give it a good finish. I would say the end of it's got to be good.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, to make it feel like it's a worthwhile story.
I think an anthology as well, because you have these page limits, you have to think about what you're doing in terms of art. I mean, a lot of artists out there, we all want to do it. We all love the idea of doing a splash page here and there, but an anthology is probably not the way to go about it.
No, definitely not. No,
that's a lot of real estate that you're losing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I've only worked on a couple of anthologies. I mean, taking ours out of the equation, but normally I'm an artist for someone else working on it, and they've asked me. It's not like, so they've done the legwork in getting the anthology sort of place sorted, and then they've come to me afterwards. So I don't know what it's like in terms of getting in touch with people and asking about anthologies and stuff. Have you guys had any experience with that?
In what way? Sorry, dude. Do you mean
I mean, obviously, I'm just doing the artwork. So people come to me, I do the artwork, give it to them, and then they pass it on to the anthology. I have yet to get involved with someone and sort of say, "Oh, can I be part of your anthology?" Or, gotcha. You know, can I submit this?
I'm not sure if Dave's asking how it is to kind of get a story in an anthology or to actually make an anthology yourself. Because obviously, they're two different beasts, aren't they?
Yeah, completely.
But on either side of that, I would say communication is definitely key. Yeah. Got to keep that order. I mean, we on our WhatsApp group, we're messaging back all the time about what we're doing on anthology, and dates are coming up, and we've got X amount of time to do this. How are you getting on? Blah 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 blah.
Yeah
set deadlines, I suppose, is a good thing.
Deadlines,
because people will let you down. I've had a sort of one man. I've written all the stories and got other artists to do them on a couple of anthologies for it. People will let you down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. If you've got a deadline for the printer for 12 noon on a Monday, make sure the artwork's done on the Friday so you've got the weekend to kind of go through any potential problems, as we've done and we've seen issues and managed to remedy them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is organisation, isn't it, really, and just making sure everything's in place. I mean, in terms of like planning an anthology, I take ours kind of out of the equation because all of us here, like on this show, we work on everything quite closely anyway, like, you know, sorting out the shows, planning things, convention appearances, blah blah blah. So it's almost more of a casual setup anyway. I mean, we're very professional and organized when we do these things, but because we've got a shorthand between us all now, we haven't, you know, like the Awesome Comic is our stuff, you know, to put our artwork in. It probably would have been a very different matter for us if we set it up to take submissions to work with people outside of our circle. That would have been a very different kettle of fish.
I mean, go back and listen to the Ken Reynolds episode. I think it's probably for me the best one to go to, because he runs Sliced quarterly, and that's open submissions and dealing with the personalities and the artwork coming in and the stories and all that sort of thing. And that makes for an interesting listen, I think, around how to run an anthology or how to submit to one, something like that, you know?
Yeah.
There's actually Gareth Hopkins asked a question about with the end of the 4-issue run of the Awesome Comics, would we consider doing other plans to sort of make more after the initial 4, but with submissions from listeners? We haven't discussed this off air. I personally wouldn't really be for that.
No.
That would be a different deal for me. I think that would have to be a different magazine almost, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of comics out there that do that already.
Yeah.
We even had a new one recently, the Horde one.
Yeah.
That kind of fulfilling that niche. And
I mean, I'd say don't rule it out, because I think because we've got that community as well, it might be something we could do, whether we spearhead it or someone who's part of the sort of the group of like people who've been on the show or listeners or whatever.
That's a really good idea, actually. Yeah. They take over the mantle, and
something we definitely either help or support or do or whatever, you know. It's something definitely to think about, I think, maybe towards the end of the run or something.
Yeah we still got another half a year of it.
Yeah. I mean, I know 11 o'clock comics have done a similar thing, haven't they, where
they've done a couple of anthologies, I think, haven't they?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah
I think that's a better idea rather than us kind of control it, if you know what I mean, kind of maybe pass the name on, the good name.
Yeah, if you want to be associated with our shite, then should we move on?
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're going to be all night.
Yeah.
Got to tell you. The next, there's a series of questions now come in from Mr. Gareth Hopkins. What was the goal of, this is probably for you, Vince, really, what was the goal of setting up a small press podcast?
There were several goals, I guess, in a sense. I mean, first and foremost, it was just to give it a go and have a bit of fun doing it. I didn't put too much pressure on it. But it was, I think the first thing was to let more people know about books that no one knows about. You know, it's all about discovery. I mean, independent comics is all about discovery. And, I mean, we know in the time that we've done this show, you know, just recent experience. You know, the World Book of Records. I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
Tony's told me about it. It's one of my books of the year now, now that I've read it.
We've all read it this week, haven't we? Yeah. Spreading the love, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
A bit, really.
And,
yeah.
But I wouldn't have seen it. I certainly probably wouldn't have seen it on my comic shop. You know, it's the word of mouth, which can be very important when it comes to comics. I mean, I know, you know, people have recommended stuff to me and I go and pick it up. So, and I felt like there was kind of a gap in the market. There's probably, you know, there are shows out there that obviously shout about a lot of different sorts of comics, but to focus like solely on independent, you know, the small press stuff, I felt like there was a gap, and, you know, hopefully it would help sort of like call out to all these books that really more people should know about, because I've had the joy of reading them, and the, you know, Dan and Tony have had so much joy reading these comics that it seems like no one else knows about, so we're here to shout about them. And, you know, the second bit was, I want to learn more about making comics, or, you know, it's all about, you know, no one ever knows everything. You know, some people like to think they do, but everyone's got their own different way of doing things. Everyone, you should always be learning when you're making comics, or always trying to make your stuff better. So it was another way to sort of get people on, talk to people, like, you know, in a real casual sort of face, almost a face-to-face manner. And just see how they do things and learn. And because we're learning on the show, hopefully you guys out there listening are also like picking up tips, and, you know, that's what's always been important. You know, we have a right laugh, and, you know, the amount of times that some of our shows are just laughing for 2 hours, but it's brilliant when people say, oh, I learned so much, you know, I'm gonna be using these tips when making my comic. That, you know, that's that's been worth it. All of this has been worth it for that. So I guess I had a couple of goals in mind, but they only sort of clarified, I think, after the first couple of weeks, I would say.
Right.
Because at first you just dip in your toe and you just think this could be an absolute disaster and only last like a couple of weeks. But once it found its footing,
yeah.
It was off. That's what it is. Listened to that first episode in, oh God, I can't remember the last time I listened to it.
I don't think I could now, because I'd be fully aware of me clicking my pen through the whole episode, because it was my first time doing it. So I had this nervous sort of, I had like just a biro that I was just clicking it on and off through the whole thing. And when I listen back, I can hear it. You can hear it in the background.
Okay.
Yeah. And now I don't have any pens, or, you know, I'm just drunk every week.
Well, that comes later, actually. There's a drunk question later, I've got to tell you. Okay, the next one is, and this comes from Gareth as well, why doesn't Vince say "make one hell of a big noise" anymore? And Sam's backed him. Sam Webster's backed him up and said, yes, I missed that too.
I guess I'm self-conscious. Well, we did, after a bunch of episodes, obviously I'll long-term listeners will know about this. We changed up the format a bit, and I think it was around that time that I changed the intro, didn't I? I think I started.
Oh, was it then? Was it?
I thought it was relatively recent.
It's been for like about half. I want to say half a year, surely. I just wanted to change it up a bit, because I think I don't know. I was saying it more and more, it felt a little bit faker. It felt like I was a game show host saying it. Do you know what I mean?
I know it's on the. I was listening to the Stacey podcast, and then you went, Tony says I sound like Partridge.
The most Partridge-like way you said it.
So, I think I was just. It'll probably come back, actually, because I'm not fully confident, even though I've got it written in front of me every week, I'm not fully confident that I'm going to get it right. So I may just go, I may revert back. You never know when it'll appear. I'll probably bring it back and then we'll call it episode one. We'll just reboot the whole thing.
Let's do it. There's I'm just sort of spinning through. There's a couple of questions here. For example, Gareth Hopkins asks, why are horses so difficult to draw? Let's not tackle that one, Gareth. I'm sure you know why. Where do we go from here? This is from Rory. Where do we go from here? Is it down to the lake, I fear? So I think what he's trying to say there, without the musical lyric in the place there, is where do we go from here? So what's next for us?
Well, I don't want to... We've talked about some things, haven't we? And normally when we... at one point we were talking about something and now we're on issue two of our comic, so... There's a dangerous chance that some of these things
we
may
say it out loud. We'll then be obliged to do it. Obviously, there's the Awesome Comics podcast POV porn film that we're making.
Oh, of course,
that's next up.
Rawsome. Oh, that didn't work.
You're accumulating quite a lot of footage for that, so
take it. You need a shower afterwards just from fucking watching it.
And you make one hell of a big noise.
I mean, just doing what we do, really. We're just having fun. We've always just had fun, haven't we, I suppose? Yeah. Just carry on doing this. The comic, we'll finish putting the comic out in about, 9 months' time, I suppose. And we're just having fun with it and then sort of see what fucking... lunatic sort of challenges we decide to take up after that, really, I suppose, is the way it goes.
I mean, we didn't know necessarily when we started we'd be doing a comic, or we'd get a chance to go to some of these conventions and stuff that we've had a chance to go to, so who knows what's in the future. But we're positive about it, we just love comics, so as long as comics stays healthy and happy, so away.
I mean, it sort of partially answers a question later, but I have to say, I'm as positive now about this podcast as I was on day one. I'm still enjoying it just
as
much.
Enjoy it. I definitely would care to do it if I didn't enjoy it.
I mean, put it this way. Yeah, if it became a chore or like we felt like we were just going through the motions, it would stop. And that's literally, I know we've been doing this for 150 episodes, but if we're not enjoying it anymore, you're not going to get it anymore. It's as simple as that, because it's not our job. We're not getting paid. Yeah.
We owe nobody nothing, do we? Yeah. I mean, as much as we love everyone, we don't like doing it, we won't do it, whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
One of the things that we're having the podcast is getting surrounded by people who are also into the same shit you're doing and creating stuff. I find that really helpful. Surrounding yourself with people that are doing the same kind of thing as you're doing. Yeah. Not exactly the same, but like we were making comics and having fun. And it's good to kind of see other people's creative efforts. Yeah. And
just sharing knowledge.
There's a fine line between sharing knowledge and I want to do my own thing, which I hope everyone does, I've so far haven't seen any sort of examples of something. Well, there's been a few odd small examples of people copying other work, someone does a story about this and then someone does something else. We've seen a few bits of sort of, let's call it fan art, that have come from a few people that shouldn't have done. I use it for knowledge and I enjoy the chat and I enjoy the social element of it as well, but I really want to be on my own around creating stuff. I think this is a conversation we've had in the week, isn't it, about something that will be remain unnamed, I'm sure, for this podcast, but we don't want to be part of that sort of hive mentality, really.
I mean, as much as kind of like independent creators creating stuff, I find it hard to sort of see how it can be more than that.
It's wonderful being able to sort of say, right, for instance, webcomics, I'm finding out about this, and like I can just put a question out there and I get lots of different answers and I can pick and choose. And I'll take that, but I'm still going to do my own thing. Everything I'm doing is going to be its own thing. And I'm certainly not going to say to everyone, oh, can everyone look at this and edit it for me? Because therein lies madness.
It becomes that thing, doesn't it? Like it's unfair on a camel, but a camel is a horse designed by committee.
Yeah. Is that the second week you've said that?
No, I like saying that one. But,
I mean, only good art comes from, to me, a lot of the time from the loner sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You don't sit in a room and create your comic book, your story. You write it out and then you speak to someone about it. You don't do the reverse, you know?
Yeah.
The good stuff in any way.
Sometimes when he's got the one vision driving everything, that's when kind of sometimes you can get some real magic out of that.
Yeah.
Usually, not always, but usually sometimes the more voices involved, the sometimes it can be a bit more anodyne and kind of...
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Okay, moving on. Next question, also from Rory Donald, aka Reach Illustration. How do you get past con fatigue? I haven't had it, actually. I've been a bit tired, but then again, I'm tired from most things. Do you know what I mean? But
are you talking about on the actual day or like too many conventions?
I took that to mean post...
Afterwards, yeah.
Yeah, I thought like immediately afterwards, sort of. Or maybe he means... too many conventions and sitting behind a table and you know, the same faces, the same. I get that occasionally, but
I think one of the advantages that I've had is when I first sort of dipped my toe into small press and stuff, you're trying all these different shows and you're going to conventions and you're tabling and you're seeing what works and what doesn't work, and then it came to a point where, like, you know, money factors into it as well. The travel and the table costs and everything. So I've cut back on it, and certainly because of the show, we're very grateful to have some wonderful opportunities with some of these great independent, you know, convention organisers. But I certainly wouldn't do as many as I used to. But that's not to say in the future I might just put my foot to the floor and do lots of different ones I haven't done before. But in terms of on the actual day when you get con fatigue, I'm knackered after every show.
You burn out quick. I burn out quite quickly at the shows. It's like I'm fucking running on adrenaline.
Yeah,
quite quickly.
I think the thing for me with the con fatigue is I don't, from in the point of view of like doing loads of conventions and getting fatigued from doing too many, I don't get it because I'm with you guys.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Because that's kind of mostly the only time we ever meet up.
Yeah.
It's fun to do. So I look forward to it. So I'm not fussed about the, remember London Super Comic Con, there was fuck all people buying anything or even walking down the aisles.
Didn't bother me.
It didn't bother me because we were there having a laugh with Dan Harris and Imber and all that sort of firm.
Yeah.
But, and us, but, yeah, I'm not overly fussed about that at the moment.
I think it's that thing of how you're approaching this. If you're approaching this like a fun hobby, something to do, that's different to when you're approaching this like, this is a business model and I'm trying to get my money out of it, or you know what I mean? Like, if you kind of turned up at that London Super Comic Con, right, I've got to sell X amount of units to do this X, Y, and Z, and no one fucking turns up, of course you're going to be stressed because that's the... you're banking on that money. Whereas if it's kind of more of a bit of a laugh, see how it goes.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter too much, but that's just the way I view it. I wouldn't want to turn this into a business in regards to that, because that would just suck the life out of it for me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to do it.
Okay.
But, fair play to you if you want to. You go for it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And we've got a few now. So not a question. This is from Mo Ali. Not a question, but I want all of the ACP to do their best Seagal impression, followed by Maro asking, can you do a Seagull impression? Thank you, Maro. Maro appears a couple of times today. Maybe another time. Maybe if I see you in person, Mo. As everyone knows, I look exactly like him, so it's not really an issue. Monty Nero, congratulations. That's some achievement. It really is. I'd like to hear a summary of the best bits over the last 150 shows. The glorious fountain of all your knowledge. Not only would this be awesome, it would only take 5 minutes. Yep. Nicely done, Monty. next one from Lyndon White. He was on the show a couple of months ago. If you were to do a sexy comics creator calendar, what month would you choose and why? I would do Dongtober, which is in the summer sometime.
Awesome. Nice. Oh, God, do we have to put a pun in it?
No, I just did then. But it worked all right, I think. I think it went all right. Yeah.
go with Christmas and Jingle Balls.
I don't know. I'm just going to crotch timber.
Crab ladder June.
What? Manuary.
Two girls, one cup. December. That doesn't really work. Let's get with it.
Annuary.
Annuary. Milftember. Gilftember. <Go on.
laughs> Bumtober? No. Oh, okay.
You're my March. What? here's another one from Marrow. God bless him. How do you make an old granny say the word? Ready, Vince?
Hang on. What?
Oh, let's just pretend I've said the C word. And I've written an answer to this in my notebook, and it just says anal. I don't know if that counts.
Imagine sort of gaslighting and drugs over an extended period.
Yeah.
To trick him to saying it.
Jesus, yeah. That got dark, Dan. Bloody hell.
Did a bit of drugging your granny. Yeah,
okay. She did it.
One from Jonathan Clode, a sensible one. If you could draw for any writer or write for any artist, who would it be? And what is your favourite bag of crisps? Let's go reverse on that. I like a plain packet of crisps. I like plain.
Yeah, it's
I'm
nice.
Getting old. I like just a plain packet of crisps. Quite nice. Yeah. You guys?
I find it hard to turn down prawn cocktail.
Prawn on cock.
He almost said it.
Yeah.
Almost
said it. I'm with you, Dan. Prawn cocktail. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tell you what, now that Walkers are doing huge bags of them, it's changed my world.
Nice.
How much is that, Lidl?
They in my suspenses, they do these bacon roll crisps that are vegetarian, and they're like fucking crack. Absolutely fantastic.
Interesting.
Yeah, like a bit massive, great big purple packet of them, and oh lord.
Do you like a massive purple packet, Dan?
Yeah, and a big knob.
Oh god.
It's like I saw where that joke was headed.
Pardon the pun, but you really leaned into that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
let's do the first bit. So if you could draw for any writer or write for any artist, who would it be and why?
Right. I got to be prepared for the amount of brown on my nose.
Right.
I would draw for Tony Esmond and I would write for Dan Butcher.
Seriously though.
Yeah.
do we put it like this? Should we say like the main, you know, the mainstream, the big two, so, you know, those sort of creators?
Yeah.
Oh, that.
You got yours ready, Tony? Give Vince some thinking time.
Yeah, I would write a Judge Dredd story for Tim Truman. I think talk about down and dirty, crazy looking visuals. I just think that would be the best thing ever. I actually floated it by Pat Mills once and said you should get Tim Truman to a Judge Dredd story, and he said I think he might be too expensive, but I think it'd be worth it. Incidentally, Tim's about to drop a Kickstarter this week. Have a look for that. There you go, a Scout quick Kickstarter. But yeah, Tim Truman, I'm a big fan of his stuff. Absolutely gorgeous. Yeah,
nice. There you go. Vince, you got yours yet?
Well, have you got yours, Dan?
Yeah,
I've got them.
I would carry on Dragon's Claws. Doing the art, Simon Furman writing, and me doing the art, and carry it on beyond the original series. I'd love to do that.
Would it involve you two living in a house and spooning and drinking tea and drinking as well? Because I like to think that it's got the whole package there.
It would be a deal breaker, but obviously I would like that to be considered.
Oh dear. Right, okay. Who would I suppose when I think about this, I don't think about me drawing for anyone else, because it
would write. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'd write, I think, because the drawing thing, I don't know whether it's a, you know, I can only see myself writing for myself to draw, if that makes sense. You know, I can't see myself doing something for like a bigger writer. I think I'd probably bottle it.
I quite like doing artwork for other people. It's challenging. But yeah, I know what you mean. If you're kind of really established writer, I'd be, oh, fuck.
Yeah. whereas, I am relishing sort of writing at the moment, I think, and probably getting into that, hopefully pushing that forward. But, I don't know, there's a murderer's row of people that I'd love to write for. I mean, Humberto Ramos would be a good one to
write
for, I think.
There's what sort of subject area? What sort of vibe would it be? Would it be a recognised character, or would you?
Probably, I would maybe like a stab at something like Generation X.
Right. Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, obviously, Generation X, it hasn't gone anywhere. But then, I don't know, doing something a bit different with that, you know.
Yeah.
I've got a few ideas. Do you ever have this, like, where you have some ideas for some sort of biggest sort of mainstream characters, and you think, oh, I've got this story, but you kind of don't want to say anything. You know, just keep it in your pocket, because maybe one day you'll get that.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You'll get that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. But then again, these days, the status quo changes with characters so quickly, don't they?
Yeah.
Like, it's a great Iron Man story, next thing you know, Iron Man's a lady, and it doesn't want to work, you know what I mean? Or I've got this great Captain America story, and then they kill him.
Oh, no, I know the book I'd write. I don't know what the artist would be, but I'd do Excalibur.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. I love that.
Yeah.
A good Excalibur story needs to be done soon, doesn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. They've really sort of like let that sort of team go, considering it was such a strong sort of series when it came out, wasn't it?
It was in X-Men Gold recently, wasn't it? And I thought, that's horrible.
They kind of fumbled it on that, didn't they? Because they had a bit of a title there, and they didn't seem to keep the momentum up.
Because they stepped into like a void, like when the X-Men was it after the Mutant Massacre, wasn't it? I think, and the X-Men were supposed to be dead or something like that.
Sort of splintered off, didn't they? Yeah, which explained why Nightcrawler was in England.
Yeah.
That was a good little series and a good consistent series to start with, wasn't it? Certainly.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I don't think I've answered that question properly, but
no, that's good.
Yeah. No, that's fine.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
What have we got next?
What have we got next? Should we go to the next one?
Yeah.
Let me see what we got. Oh, so it's from Stuart Moraine, this one. Since starting, how has the small press scene changed? Is it for the better? And are there things you'd still like to change?
That's an interesting one.
It is.
Yeah. I wasn't sure of what the small press scene was like before we started doing the show.
I
didn't have my finger too much in the pulse, but I've certainly seen it sort of grow and people step up and do more with what they've got.
It's very
impressive.
I think, like Dan, I don't really have too much context in terms of what it was like, because, you know, I jumped into the small press scene and shortly afterwards we started the show, so it's not like I had years on the circuit. But for me, I've seen a lot of creators sort of come together, like from different areas, that people that may not have sort of interacted before. You know, they're coming from all over the country, but they're interacting, and just everyone knows everyone a little bit more at the moment. I think there's that real the network, as it were, has grown, and the quality is just off the chain at the moment. I think with small press.
Undoubtedly, the quality is improved. I think it's become more of a name thing, where I think certainly in the last year or so, you've started seeing small press people named as guests at conventions. Rachel Smith, for example,
definitely
guest at I think 3 cons this year, as far as I remember. I think the line is blurred now between small press and pro. You've only got to look at someone like the Etherington brothers. What are they? I don't know what they are. Are they in it working for a big company, or are they indie?
Yeah, you're right.
I think a lot of the big pros have backed off from the scene a bit. I think you used to go to conventions, see Warren Ellis or, you know, Alan Moore even, or Grant Morrison or Mark Miller, or Neil Gaiman, or these sort of people, and you don't really see them anymore. I don't think because the scene isn't as the conventions that are popular are not the ones about comics now anymore. I'm a bit worried that we're becoming factionalized in a different way, and I agree with you, Vince. I think that it's nice to see Avery Hill at a table alongside, I don't know, someone like Chris Imber, both equally, you know, great sort of powerhouse creators and stuff like that. But I think I do have worries about us factionalizing into little groups that are going to affect stuff.
Yeah.
I think conventions are, and I'm hoping it's improving this year, but last year it became a social circle as opposed to a way to get your art out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I've seen it from a creator today saying, who's going to such and such convention? It's been ages since I've hooked up with you guys. And I'm thinking, I don't know, some conventions seem to be more about where we're going out at night and you know, stuff like that. Which yeah, I know we're gotcha. You know, we're part of that as well. Anyway.
Yeah, but it's kind of making and flogging the comics and getting people to read them for me, front and center.
Right.
Obviously, I want to meet other creators and stuff, but I really want to get the comic in people's hands and buy comics myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's a funny question because it's a question that came in before the sort of, let's not call it unionization, but organization of the small press came in, which is a subject of the week, I suppose, because there are plans by certain people to get together and organize a sort of, but I think the problem is there's so many little groups now that isn't reaching into some of them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the people who go to the South London Comic and Zine Fair aren't going to know about what's going on at the MCM. They wouldn't have a clue.
No. Yeah.
It's a strange time. I think there's so many creators out there. I think there's almost too many creators to support sales. Sometimes we hear a lot of bad stories about sales at conventions.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of small press groups, just UK-based ones, that are popping up on Facebook, and they're very organised, and there's tons of creators, loads of people I haven't even heard of before, and they're doing their thing. So in that regard, it's getting bigger than ever, like bigger than a couple of years ago, at least. There's certainly more people putting out stuff.
Yeah,
it's an interesting one. I don't know. The elephant in this room is kind of that we've got a convention coming up, haven't we? Is Comic Creators Uncovered?
I can't remember the name of it, to be fair. Something like that, isn't it? Yeah.
And I think they're going to. It's going to, rather than be an event about selling comics, it's going to be discussing the production and making of comics and all the areas around it. I'd be interested to see how that goes down, if I'm honest.
Yeah, my main worry about that is they're charging, and I know it might be to play for the venue, but I don't know. I don't know whether it's something that I would want to shell out for.
Yeah. But they do that every year with the Comics Uncovered, don't they? I think.
No, but this one section of it is so. Comics Uncovered is £85, but the Comic Summit area of it is £20 for a day, or I think £30 for 2 days.
Oh right.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what to think about it, mate. To be fair, I mean, I know we posted the stuff on the page and everything. I don't really know what to think about it. I'm still chatting to a creator about it today. I don't know really. I just don't know.
I'm not sure what to think.
Yeah, it's very interesting times at the moment because obviously with the quality getting better and like certainly names having more recognition, or you know, a lot of people are hitting a certain glass ceiling with their work and they want to push past it now. So people are asking questions about how to do that, or you know, where do we go from here? You know, and whatever helps like the industry or just publishing in general, you know, is great. You know, I think as long as there's no exclusion of anyone, as long as like, you know, it's for the betterment of everyone, I'm all for that. I think I've stepped back a little bit from a lot of certainly convention talk or process, you know, a lot of talk, because I'm in a mindset at the moment where I just want to create. I just want to make my stories. I'm getting back into my hermit shell and just thinking, right, let's just make your stuff. And then when you're happy with that, step back into the big wide open world and see where we are there. So I'll be watching it all develop, all these different conversations, and see what happens, and you know, hopefully good things. That's all we want.
I mean, it's something that goes on anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a convention where I don't chat to people about what they're doing and how they're releasing it, and I'll meet up with a lot of creators. I'm due to meet up with Mr. Garvey anytime soon for a chat, and I meet regularly with Sidesy, and I met up this week with Emma Donovan from who's a sort of a picture book and the X of No Brow and stuff like that, and we had a big chat about the future of it.
Yeah,
you know, isn't it something that's happening anyway?
Yeah,
yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah,
and look, we talk about it every week. Let's face it,
we do cover it.
I don't know. So that's how it's changed a bit. That question sort of dwelled originally was in the fact that how has it changed, isn't it?
Ask us that question at episode 300 as well. Ask us that question at episode 300, and you'll probably get a completely different answer.
I think it's evolving all the time. That's the thing, isn't it? Everything is evolving like this.
Yeah.
And so it should. And in 10 years' time, will we be holding a small press comic in our hands? I don't know, actually. I'm not 100% sure whether we will as much. You know.
So, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's next question. Sarah Harris, can we have a catchphrases through the ages roundup, like pitch it to me and shut up Tony? And I can't remember any other ones, but I know there were others.
Oh, fuck. The different cat. God, we had a few.
Yeah. Shut up Tony didn't make a return for a while, did it? Because everyone wants to hear me. I think that's the reason.
Yeah.
Oh, shut up Tony. Yay. That was just one for the fans.
One from Sam. Moving on to the next one. Are you familiar with the Comic House app? I hear it's a Netflix UK. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah, well, they sponsor us. See, that's not going anywhere.
And because this seems a bit serious, this is again from Stuart after his first question, which we did get serious over. And because this seems a bit serious, convince segue from Kevin Bacon to Comic House in 6 degrees or less.
Right.
I've got good ways to link it.
Hang on, right, okay. No, I've been. I did have a thing. I had a basic think about this, but I'm doing it on the fly right now.
Okay.
So from what was it?
Kevin Bacon to Comic House.
Right. So in six moves. Right. This is right.
Okay.
Kevin Bacon was in the film R.I.P.D.
Was he?
Yep.
Right.
And R.I.P.D. is a Dark Horse comic, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yep. Dark Horse published the Aliens series of comic books.
Oh, nicely done.
Aliens had a crossover with Judge Dredd, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah.
Judge Dredd was also published through IDW, and you can find the Judge Dredd IDW books on Comic House.
Nicely done.
Yes, Pete, I feel like there should be
twice
a crowd
for this week.
Yes, there you go. I'm quite pleased with that. How many moves?
I was trying to. That was like five or six. You did well there.
Yeah.
I was thinking like because we got Bruce Campbell is on Comic House.
Yeah.
But where can you go from Bruce Campbell to get to Kevin Bacon? I'm sure they would have starred in a film that
there must be something.
Yeah.
Oh God, there's always something.
Anyway, you did it.
I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
Next question, Richard Carrington. If you could, he asked a couple of questions. This is his first one. If you could own a single page of comic art, what page would it be and why?
Oh, fuck.
Oh, a single page. Jesus.
Yeah. Shall I go first?
Yeah.
One? Oh, a couple. But the first one would be the Uncanny X-Men page where Wolverine is in the sewers.
That's awesome.
Written by Claremont. Just that page. I would love it. I could stare at that all day.
Yeah.
I would go for in Secret Wars, the first issue, there's a bit where all the heroes are looking up. There's a big shot of them all in a group looking up by Mike Zeck. I've got so many fond memories of looking at that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I'd love to have that page.
I would probably say either. No, I think I've got it. Any page by the artist Vanyo, who did Stormforce for Battle.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
These are pages that I think that are lost to time or just gone anywhere. But, you know, just rereading a lot of that artwork, I'm just marvelling at it.
That chap's still alive. Maybe you should try and reach out to him.
Yeah, he could do.
I think he. Sure, yeah, there was two brothers. One of them passed away in 2006, but I think sometimes there's a bit of confusion over which one is which. But I'd love to find a piece somehow.
We can make that dream come true for you, Vince. Like a kind of this is your life thing. And get him on.
I think that was more. What's his name? Savile, wasn't it?
Fucking hell.
Oh, Jesus. Jesus, that got dark.
What about you, Daniel?
I said mine, the Secret Wars.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, thing. Mate. Sorry. Right. Yeah. Okay, moving on. So congratulations, guys. So widely speaking about comics, we often hear about stuff we'd like less at comic conventions, but is there anything that is yet to be added that you thought about and have never seen? So Gareth is saying, what should there be at comic conventions? When...
Something that isn't there that should be. Is that what we're saying?
I'm going to go with one. I'll go with one, guys, because I've got to tell you, the big publishers.
Yeah.
Don't get them anymore. We need them back, and that's...
Yeah.
It's like, even 2000 AD we don't really see.
No, you're right.
Marvel or DC. The biggest thing we've had is Valiant. which was at London Super Comic Con.
Yeah.
But we don't get enough of them. We used to get, even if they didn't have a stand, yeah, used to have the editors and, you know, sort of talent spottery type people walking around.
You get 2000 AD at quite a few places, don't you? But not as much.
No, you don't. You don't.
Were they at London last year? They weren't.
No, they weren't. No. They very rarely do conventions anymore. Even when they did Nottingham a few years ago, it was just a guy who had a load of omnibuses. They didn't have a sort of proper presence there.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's a shame. It really is a shame. Yeah, because like it used to be, you go to one and they had every fucking company there representing.
Yeah.
But I guess the business model's changed so much now that maybe they don't need to look for talent in UK cons because they've got the whole world.
It's a lot of lines. But
yeah,
how do you build a fan base up? You know, I'm in touch with Nobra about attending some more conventions because some of their books would go down a storm at like MCM and places like that.
Yeah.
I think if anything, I'm a complete outsider and I don't particularly know what I'm talking about. But it seems like the kind of the big two generally have gone around stuff the kind of wrong way, and they seem to be losing. I know print is suffering generally overall, but it's a constant like losing readers. And I feel like you need to kind of get in back to like the roots and get the kids back to reading comics. And it used to be, we talked about this many a times, but like going down the newsagent, it used to be that whole rack of the comic books by the Teal War in the magazine rack. And now there's just none of that. Just that, pick it up. And then, well, I did that. And then like 30 years later, I'm fucking hosting a podcast talking about, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Big fan of it. So I feel like that needs to be done. But I'm not sure if they're kind of considering that.
Yeah.
But even like as well as the European comics, like where are they in this country? They need to kind of lead the charge on that.
Humanoids and all these sort of people. Yeah, you occasionally see them. I think they did London. I can't remember where they did Thought Bubble last year.
Yeah. I mean, I guess something, you know, what I'm saying is more sort of pipe dream stuff, and certainly something we don't see. Well, this is something that the smaller shows that we know that don't fall foul of it is when you get to these sort of bigger shows, just a little more care and consideration taken to where the actual comics are, or you know how getting sort of punters to the tables where the artist alleys are and stuff.
Yeah,
I know from stories I've heard, or I mean certainly when we went to London Super Con that time. You know, I mean it was fantastic weekend for us, but we were sort of tucked away almost. With not too many. I mean, the signs came out a bit later, but it's letting people know where the comics are, away from the merch stands of the bigger floor, if that makes sense.
If you had the big Marvels, the one they do at New York, and they have a stage and they have interviews and signings and freebies, and it's like a big deal. You know, if you had that, people would pour over and see them. You know, the Marvel sign these days is enough to drag people over, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because they've got that audience prime there with the films, and it's just Christ. Yeah, you got to capitalize on that. You're really kind of missing out there. Mm-hmm. I guess they're making their money for the films and the tons of merchandise for that. I don't know, sometimes I feel like I kind of expect something that they should be doing something for comics when really they don't have to. Do you know what I mean? It's all in their own interest. They're making money hand over fist.
Okay.
But fuck it, we'll make the comics.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you two guys? Anything you think they're missing?
I don't know.
Think it should be added? What you'd like to see there? I mean, Gareth mentions a couple of things like large-scale projections of artists.
That's a good idea.
Date portfolio advice panels.
Something that I do see with some shows now that I really like and I want to see more of is certainly workshops for kids and stuff.
Oh, God,
I love seeing that. And I like, certainly, I think Sice has done it, True Believers do it, Leamington, etc., you know. Having these workshops are fantastic because, you know, kids love getting involved with it. And, you know, if we don't get, we keep saying it, if we don't get the next generation going, it is going to be we are completely done. You need to get people, you know, kids involved with it. I mean, I would have loved it when I was a kid, when, so I kind of am, only with a beard. Yeah. But yeah, but you know what I mean, just getting kids involved with comics, even if like 90% of them grow up and fall out of comics, like sometimes it happens in life, there's that 10% that will always be there.
Yeah.
And you need that next generation. So I applaud anyone who does it, and I want to see more of it.
Like, I feel sorry for parents when they bring the kids into the con and it's just like all loads of stuff for fucking 10, 20 quid and kind of comics that's not really aimed at kids. I feel like there should be some activities.
Yeah.
Like Cheltenham, there was stuff there. Dan Malia's con as well. There was stuff
Leamington,
for kids. Leamington. I mean,
and at Nottingham. Nottingham is a big kids one, isn't it? It's like a very popular family one. Yeah.
Say, like, every creator that turned up had like 20 or 30 black and white photocopies of one of their characters or something, and they could put them somewhere, and then they start getting that kid to kind of introduce that character when he's colouring it up and sticking it on the wall or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know, try and get a bit of sort of back and forth going.
Cool. Let's move on then. It's something that Gareth touches in his question, and also Richard Carrington has asked. Now, Richard asked, what's been your best and worst moment? Let's ignore worst, because we've done that, haven't we? Yeah. Let's do best moment at a convention. I'm going to start. I'm going to say from one side of the convention to the other.
Dan Butcher video. The famous Dan Butcher video. Best moment at a convention?
Yeah. So during the time we've been on the show, best moment.
I would say anyone that has listened to the show who's come up to the table. I know that sounds a bit cheesy, but certainly when we meet like new listeners, like you know, and they come out of nowhere and sort of say, "Oh, I like listening to the show." It's just the best thing ever, because I always think we're a niche within a niche within a bubble. So you know, anyone who hears this show is a freaking miracle, to be honest. So, well, you know, when we've travelled conventions across the country and stuff, and people come up and say hello, it's just the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Dan?
Oh, God, that's really difficult. I'm absolutely struggling with that.
Come on, I don't Dan. It must be when you went up and saw Mike Zeck at London Super Comic Con.
Oh, God, yeah, that was absolutely fantastic.
That was a good time, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a really good moment.
Yeah, good moment, wasn't it?
I totally fanboyed out there. Yeah. Sort of running over and giving him a copy of Vanguard and chatting to him. Yeah. I was,
going for dinner with Pat Mills.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Having the privilege to meet like a lot of these sort of creators has just been wonderful, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's like, fuck, you know, I'm having dinner with Pat Mills here.
Me and Dan had a miniature moment where we looked at each other like, is this happening?
It's nice when you meet people who you really looked up to, and they're nice.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We've had it a few times where people have been so cool with us.
Yeah.
It's been like, you know, Duncan Fagredo, Chris Weston, you know, there's load, you know, Phillips, there's loads of people who just turned out to be like really nice. John Wagner a few weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had a fuck with him. What a nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, really good.
Proper nice.
Yeah. Okay, next one. This is from Mrs. Gander, Susie Gander. What's been your highlight of the comic world during the time that you've been on recording?
Of the comic world? Oh, God.
It's put me on my arse a bit, that one.
Yeah. Susie's probably, like, chuckling to herself now, thinking, I've got him. I got him. Ha-ha.
I'm going to say it's the rise of creators through social media and just through sort of the internet stuff that it was just like these sort of individually great talents that just I haven't seen before.
Yeah,
a lot of people who've come who I've seen through, you know, maybe not Avery Hill because I was kind of friends with him and know Brad before, but. Here's one, Stuart McCune. Like, I didn't meet Stuart, but we met him because of the podcast.
Hmm.
And you know, Gareth Hopkins and all these sort of people that I've met because of the podcast. And I've like really felt sort of an inspiration and a love for their work. It's really, really good for me.
Yeah. For me, I guess it's not necessarily in the comics world. I think I can speak to something where I've opened my eyes to it, as it were.
Yeah.
So it feels like a brand new thing that's getting bigger all the time, but that's only because I'm completely aware of it. And that is me delving into like European comics and graphic comics.
Good show. And the rise of being able to get them because of purely digital distribution. Well, a lot of those books we'd never have seen, and they're actually not printed, a lot of these books, you know.
Yeah, and we've talked about them a few times on the show, but you know, Europe comics are doing digital only translation of these books, and you know, they're so good that you get frustrated that you can't have like a printed copy. Yeah.
They're so good, makes you want to cry. I just wanted like a big hardback on my shelf. Yeah. They're just so gorgeous.
So, I know the European market has obviously been massively strong, you know, stronger than most markets throughout history and stuff. But you know, over the past couple of years, my eyes were opened and they're never shutting again now.
And so it just
feels like that side of comics is just getting bigger and better for me all the time because of all the stuff I can discover. Yeah.
And I suppose from the comic world, it means that the comic world is as we deal with it, isn't it? So for me, is the highlight of the comic world is getting to work with some really great talented people.
Yeah.
Like Susie and like Nick and, you know, Dave Brown and you guys and everyone I've worked with this year. Mm. And I've got a couple of projects which are sort of bubbling, which hopefully I'll get to talk about soon. It's just like, to be fair, I'm like, fucking, this is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I write these stupid stories on the train on the way into work and people are now drawing them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, I love it's one of the moments is when we get fan art, like get fan art for Vanguard, or we get fan art for the comic, and even when people do silly little bits of graphics with our heads pasted on something.
Yeah,
I fucking love all that stuff.
Yeah,
love it. Yeah, it makes me laugh. Another thing, like just in comics in general, that I think is great is you're seeing a lot of creators. I mean, I would probably say with Image now, you get a lot of the ones that are working with Marvel, but they're coming in with amazing series that they're teaming up. We talked about Death or Glory last week.
Yep.
You know, you're seeing fresh new series, which are essentially the independent comics, aren't they? That's what they are.
But, yeah,
you know,
Image is just a printing platform. Yeah. It'll be a bit more than that, but that's what they are.
So you're seeing these big creators taking a chance. You know, they've got these stories that they want to tell, and they're going ahead and telling them, and teaming up with some artists. You know, I'm discovering amazing artists because of who these people are teaming up with. You know, I love seeing that, all the new stories coming up. I think, you know, there's never been a better time to discover a new sort of original story that doesn't necessarily have to be capes or anything like that. You know, I think there's something for everyone now, which is good.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay, moving on. Stuart Mulrain has got a question. If you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be? Mighty oak. I've gone for wisteria. A wisteria tree, because it sounds a bit like a sort of hilarious venereal disease.
Is bamboo a tree? I would go for bamboo.
Bamboo? Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Nice choices. Next one from Matthew Tiberius Simmons. Regardless of them being good or bad, can you describe the most bizarre small press comic you've ever read? Now, I'm going to change the word bizarre because it has a sort of slightly negative connotation. Yeah. I'm sure Matthew didn't mean it like that. I'm going to say original. Can you describe the most original small press comics you've ever read?
Oh, God, there's so...
Yeah.
So many. I mean, if I had to take one off the top of my head, there's the series Galaxa Freaks. Which
great.
I've never seen anything like it, and it's a head trip. The whole, you know, that's certainly original, I think. And I don't.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
When I got sent through issues 1 and 2 of Monstrosity, is it by Zach Simmons Hand?
The
artwork on that was just like, this is fucking ace.
Yeah.
Really great. I was one of those things again, you like when you see something from small press and it's like, fuck, this is small press. This is, the quality's just fucking off the hook. It's really good.
Yeah. I'm going to say 683, which we didn't know what that was at all, did we, when it came in from Gareth Hopkins?
Yes.
We didn't have a clue what that was.
Yeah.
And it opened my eyes about what is a comic and what's not. And I'll fight you if you say it's not. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. And I think there's three great examples of just originality. That's what you got to go with it. Don't follow what other people are doing.
No.
Go with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We all said that, like, you kind of like when you're doing a story or making a comic, don't do what someone else is always doing. Why do you want to say the same thing as someone else? Like, you've got your own voice, and it's a matter of telling that story, whatever story that may be, in your voice. That's what's interesting, not trying to be a second rate fucking Spawn knockoff or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I know what you mean. Next one. Sam's asked a couple of questions about the origins of the podcast, but I think we kind of touched on those. So thanks, Sam. We'll move on.
There was radioactive material and an orgy.
And a Spider-Manning. Yeah.
Oh. I thought we were back to seagulls again.
Wasn't that a seagull then? Alan Henderson. Firstly, congratulations. Sticking with an idea and running for it for years is something to be proud of. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
So, questions for the discussion. If you could speak to Vince, Dan and Tony 150 weeks ago, what would you tell them to do more of or less of?
Lunges.
Yeah. More yoga.
Yeah. That would be... I tell you what, that sort of answer would be to suggest that we know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We really don't. I would say, you know, purely from a technical standpoint, I would have said, get yourself a microphone. And, you know, even though I don't think my audio is terrible, but, you know, you know there's a certain things you learn doing these sort of shows.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd have gone back and I think I'd say something like, be prepared to be more involved in the scene.
Yeah.
I thought we were just going to be three mates talking bollocks on a Sunday night, and that would be it.
Yeah.
But I've kind of... Chris Imber said this to me at a convention once. He said, you don't really realise what you're doing. He didn't mean it in a bad way. He just meant a lot of people listen. And you know, and I think it surprised me. I thought we'd get like a couple of listeners and we'd just have a laugh and it would be a sort of slightly sort of selfish bit of fun we'd have, and no one, we'd never really see anyone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think I'd be prepared just to sort of... We've run panels. I love running panels now and stuff like that. And people ask us to come along and do stuff like that. And I didn't think that would happen.
No.
So I'd say be prepared for that. You know.
Yeah, because I was kind of just on my Todd banging out Vanguard online. And I thought it'd just be a laugh to be talking comics on a podcast and see where it'd go. Yeah. I honestly didn't see everything that's come down the road since then.
I guess
we can see what you mean. If kind of like, if you're kind of a small press creator and you don't have the people around you, like I don't, my wife's certainly not interested in comic books. She'll go and see the films, but she's never read the stuff I do. I'm not sure if that's sad or not. I don't think many people's partners do. But it's kind of like, it's good to hear people talking about the process and hearing from other people doing the same thing as you. So in as much as that, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
We've become sort of like moral and spiritual leaders of.
We are fucked. If we're moral leaders, I've got to tell you, everyone's in trouble. if you open our Bible and it says "do them up the wrong one," then V, what about
Jesus.
You?
I would just. What would I teach myself? Probably just to take better care of myself.
Yeah, same clothes as Tony at conventions.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. And be prepared to have more people talk to you than you'd ever thought possible. Yeah.
I'd be prepared for people to come up to me and go, all right, you wanker, who are you?
Yeah, who are you?
You know,
yeah.
Look, we all portray this sort of certain personalities. In real life, I'm very sensible and boring. But we do portray certain personalities and people kind of like that, don't they? And they join in the fun. And people will go, oh, yeah, up the wrong one at me or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? They'll shout things. I'm like, oh, who are you?
You know. Yeah, right. But 9 times out of 10, I don't recognise the person who's come up to the table opposite me. So I'm just really bad with names and faces. So that's my defence.
Yeah.
He's asked a couple of, I think we've covered a couple of them, but Alan's last question on this little section is, what creator or fan has been mentioned the most but has never been heard on the podcast. Well, it ain't going to be you, Alan, is it? Because you're coming on soon, my friend.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I was going to say Rachel Smith, but we've had her on the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sarah got mentioned. She's been on now, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Sarah Harris. Alan's been mentioned a lot. He's been on. Yeah, it must be someone, wasn't there?
Miller, Larson, apart from the big boys.
Oh, yeah, probably. Would we say Mark Miller?
Oh, we could go back to Miller Watch, couldn't we?
Miller Watch,
yeah.
Another one, yeah.
Mark, if you're listening, we're big fans.
Yeah, come on. Richard Carrington's asked another question. Who would be your dream guest? You can have one living one and one dead one.
Oh, God.
To have had Kirby on the Kirby episode.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, that'd be great. Just get him on and talk through all his work.
Yeah.
I'd go for living. I would go for Alan Moore. I think he's got this sort of grand sort of wizard reputation, but I've met him a couple of times and seen him give talks as well, and he's actually quite a funny guy.
Yeah.
And I think he would get it more than people expect he would. Yeah. And I think I'd like to hear him talk about stuff and just general stuff, because I know he's a lover of comics.
Yeah.
You know, I'd just like to hear him talk about just different comics, not necessarily ask him a question about, you know, what's the name of the demon that lives in your toilet or something. You know, I actually just like to talk to him about, you know, comic art and stuff like that in the early days and just have a laugh with him, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I think about that, sometimes I have to also think about the informative but also the entertainment value with it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes there's fantastic creators that we all know and we all love, but they could probably be a bit dry on an interview.
Yeah.
No matter how, you know, fantastic they are and how informative that they're being, like, sometimes it doesn't necessarily make for entertaining audio. We've all listened to a podcast in our time that have been like, cool, this isn't as good as I thought. Yeah. So I'd probably say I'd go probably a little bit left field and left field, but also mainstream. Someone like Jonathan Ross.
Yeah,
that'd be interesting.
Yeah,
I swapped messages with him earlier, Jonathan Ross, because he's on a Facebook group with me about comic art, original comic book art, and I was chatting to him about some of his Kirby pages earlier.
Oh, nice one!
Lovely. Yeah, look at you.
Yeah. I know he's got like a secret Facebook identity. Yeah. It's not that secret, and he does little video tours of his original art room and stuff on this sort of closed group and one, and it's like, oh my God,
yeah.
He could buy the whole of the town I live in with the art he's got in his room. It's just amazing. Yeah. There you go. Yeah,
it'd be interesting to get him on to talk talk through stuff.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah. And he has a go. He plays about. He does the old comic here and there. Fun, doesn't he?
Yeah. Turf was an interesting comic, actually.
Good idea, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think once you get him outside of the world of this sort of... Once you get him talking about stuff he loves, like if anyone watched that In Search of Steve Ditko documentary he did, or you know, some of the movie ones done, they're really interesting. They're not full of the sort of rubbish that he has to put up with on talk shows and stuff. You know, you can really see the sort of personality of him coming through.
Yeah.
Which is good.
I think Stuart Lee's a bit of a comic fan.
Yeah.
Mentioned him before. We've talked about him before. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's a big Hulk fan. And
yeah.
Getting him on to talk Hulk and
that'd be interesting.
Pitch the Stuart Lee Hulk comic 12-issue run or something.
Yeah, that'd
be good. What do you do with it?
If anyone knows these people, please get them to call us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving on. What have we got next? So Marrow has a question. What are your most embarrassing secrets? I like, fuck me, Marrow. If the whole of my life isn't out here on a podcast by now, I think I'm in trouble. Yeah. I don't think I've got any embarrassing ones left. No. Even that time I did a shit and it looked like I was dying came out 1 week, didn't it? So
yeah. I can't really top that.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I've got a massive list that I could say, but I'm not going to, because it's bad enough people having lots of ammunition on me anyway because of this show. I don't want to add to it. Yeah. So
We won't put the photographs of you when you were in an alt rock band a few years ago either. I was the third member of the Dixie Chicks for a while, but nobody remembers that either.
No, you Dicks with Chicks. That's what it
was. Oh, that's it. Similar sort of,
Yeah. Oh, God, I can't think of any.
I don't think you're just too cool, Dan. That's your problem. You're just too damn cool. You've never been embarrassed.
Question from Daryl Thorpe, 4P. Has hosting the Awesome Comics podcast helped you become a better creator? And if so, why? There you go. That's a good question.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
I think the answer is yes. Without a doubt, because I've learnt so much about so many different avenues of comics. And I think it's maybe a better creator, not in terms of like the work I'm producing, but certainly in communicating with people. I've definitely gotten better at like talking to people about process, or talking to people at conventions and stuff.
Or talking to people about collaborating as well. That's an easier thing now, isn't it?
Yeah, and certainly like when it comes to writing and stuff, you know, I'm picking up tips all the time. So hopefully, I think yes, it has, and hopefully, it shows in the work, and like obviously the Awesome Comics issues that we're putting out. You know, hopefully the next work is always better than what came before.
I've always been a great believer in taking the good bits of what we talk to people about and ignoring the stupid. I think we've done quite well there, haven't we? We've sort of streamlined. Our, you know, the opening of our ears, as it were, to the right things and not to the wrong things.
There's a few bits of advice I've cherry picked off of people, well, loads actually, over the years on the show. Definitely that one of Pat Mills stuck with me about naming the comic after the lead character.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, interesting. This is from a more commercial aspect, at least. And I was like, oh yeah, I hadn't really considered that, but yeah, that's absolutely on point. Come for that. Ryan K. Lindsay with the reward tiers. Even though I've never run a Kickstarter, I'm a lot more critical of them now.
When
I see that the first reward tier is like our eternal thanks, it's kind of like that's your bloody one shot you had there, and you blew it. That's the one you want to get in there and make right. There's a few bits and bobs over the years.
Okay. Next question from John Ottaway. I have a question, ... Perhaps the most important question in the comic world. When bagging and boarding, do you put the opening at the top or the bottom? Well, John, I'm not a fucking barbarian, my friend. At the top, obviously.
Yeah, I always thought it was I didn't even realise you did it at the bottom.
Some people do it at the bottom. I'm not. Yeah. I don't agree with that. I think it's
heretics.
Yeah, exactly. And when you're sort of slamming them into a comic box, comics, not your balls, they get caught up, don't they? Yeah, I know some people do it. I know a comic shop that does it, and I said, what are you doing that for? And they just looked at me like I was being stupid, but
the fuck's this, Tony hissed.
As he smashed the place up. a little tip, not a question, from Simon Russell, who we met a couple of weekends ago, and I had a little peek at a work in progress of Simon's this week, which... I thought was really, really interesting. Really interesting approach to a comic. But his tip is, did you know you can use the skin of a cucumber to rub out felt tip?
I did not know that.
He caveats that with, I would never do this because a cucumber is the devil's penis and I won't have it stinking up my sketchbooks. I'm not actually sure if that's genuine.
Absolutely right. Cucumber is a vegetable that ruins everything it touches. It's just a green bag of water that's a pile of shit. There you go. I think I've ranted about cucumbers before, haven't I?
I think you have. Yeah. Is that true, though? Can someone do it on a video and show us if it's true? Because I don't know.
I'm dubious about that, I've got to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm never going to do it because I won't. Yeah.
Coming from a flat earther, I'm dubious about that.
Yeah. I bring up the reply to that question as pickled penis my ass.
Oh. Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. What you do on your own time is...
From Patrick Montgomery, what is each presenter's favourite cake? Now, this is obvious, Patrick. Thank you for your question. Tiramisu.
No. I will not have a cake with coffee in it.
Prison pocket.
You've ruined my pod comment for later.
Oh, shit.
Are the podcasts available? Ah! I'm joking.
I'm partial to an Angel Leia cake. That's what I've got to say.
You're a little old lady. Are you a little old lady?
Oh, yeah, you're spitting tiramisu at me.
I think any cake with toffee and or coffee in it with walnuts is the the shit. Can't beat it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this absolute biz. Yeah,
is that because of the walnuts, though, Dan? Do you think?
No, they're good. The walnuts. I mean, generally, I'm a bit selfish. I'd say to people like when someone's got a birthday at work, I'll say I'll go and get the cake.
Yeah.
And they always end up with a coffee flavored one or a toffee flavored one, even if they specifically tell me they've got a serious allergy to either or both. That's what they're getting.
You just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah, I'm all right eating my coffee cake.
Yeah.
Big shout out to carrot cake as well.
Yeah.
It's all in the buttercream. That's all I've got to say. Oh,
Christ. great British bum off on this show.
I would watch that.
I would watch that too, yeah. Right, question from Sam Webster. Can we expect 150 more? Fuck yeah, of course you can.
Yeah.
Maybe. Checks the pipe.
You can expect it.
Yeah. We'll be here in 3 years' time. Fuck you all. Yeah. Right, what's the next one? Mauro. Another question from Mauro Arthur Fuzaki. That's not your real name. We know that. Which episode did each of you enjoy the most? And do your wags ever listen to the show? Now, that wag has clearly come... I don't know what that means, wag. It's clearly come from the fact that a woman at my work started a rumour that I have a tail. I don't have a tail.
That's one of the catchphrases. You've said that a few times on this show.
Crystal McDonald at my office made up the rumour that I have got a tail. I haven't got a tail. That's not true.
He's got a nubbin.
It's just that one time he had to tuck it around the back.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So let's go back to the initial part of his question. Which episode did you enjoy the most?
I tell you what, after 150 episodes, I can't think of ones. I just have certain highlights pop into my head.
Yeah.
But I can't think of any particular episode or particular guest or particular moment.
There was one really interesting. We had to pitch, like, all of us had to pitch a comic for a character. I can't remember who the creator was on for this, but we all seemed to really get into that one. That was good. Whenever we have kind of a good process talk, I really enjoy those too.
Okay. Yeah.
I tell you what, and this is going to be heartbreaking. One of my favourite episodes was when Is McAuliffe came on and asked us questions.
Oh. About
and it was quite nice to be on the other side of the table, as it were.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was quite cool, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they
speaking record. Of Iz, we should be seeing her at Lawgiver on Saturday, won't we?
Yes, nice.
We got robbed of that episode.
I know.
Yeah, never mind.
Are we going to do that again at some point?
I'd like to do it again.
Maybe before issue 4 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like kind of...
It's the end of the story, isn't it? Sort of thing. Not for our lives, but you know.
Yeah. I just feel like it needs venting.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
I've got a few. Can I say mine?
Go for it.
Anything with Pat.
Yeah.
Pat Mills. Scott Adkins.
Yeah.
I really like the Catherine Briggs episode. I really like that one. Mm-hmm. When we talked about sort of fine art and comics.
Yeah.
When we had Uncle David White on from Avery Hill.
Yeah.
The episode that had the Peach Stone incident. I still giggle at that.
Yeah. Fuck me. I've got fond memories of laughing at that on the train platform.
Yeah.
Bad Comics with Matt Harrower. I really like that one.
Yeah, that was good.
It made me laugh. Yeah, and he's almost finished the comic we've done that came from that episode. So I'm quite amazing. Pleased about that. It's going to be fun. Anything with Laura Trinder and Christian Wargoose as well. I just think they're like really fun guests.
Yeah.
Sort of throw them
was I know Chris was on recently. And Laura was in the background of that one. But I was looking at a list, and it was like episode 3 and 4, or where, you know.
Yeah, it was really early on, wasn't it?
Yeah. That they were both on. We need to get them back on properly.
Clifford Cumbert has asked the question, what are your favourite moments of the past 150? I think it kind of covers that.
Yeah.
Cliff, thanks for the message.
One thing I have loved is getting a chance to talk to creators that I've been a massive fan of. Whether it be like Ryan K. Lindsay or Jamie Smart, you know, or we had an episode talking about like who are our idols in comics, and we had to run off a list, didn't we? You know, who are influences? That was it.
Influences, the
influence. And we've managed to get some of those people.
Some of those on
the show.
Believe it. Yeah.
So it's been amazing, like stuff like that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I like it when we all like really one of us says a comic, and this has happened a few times recently, and then we all go and read it, and we're like, "Fucking hell, I love that." You know what I mean? And people, I like when people come back and say, oh, I read that book. We've even had people that have come on and said, oh, you know, you talked about this book. Well, I picked that up and really loved it. And yeah. Oh, great. You know.
Yeah.
Well, we sort of championed someone and they've got over the line with their Kickstarter or something like that. And yeah, we've done a little bit to help them get there. You know, yeah. And I'm really pleased with that sort of side of things. Yeah.
Like that Airboy. That's still, that's great.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. There's that one bit with laughing out loud on the train where they have to swap into the uniforms.
Yeah.
It's like, don't forget the uniforms. And then the next panel is like, I forgot the uniforms. And it's just fucking great.
Cliff's got a second part to his question. That is, and is Dan still obsessed with cactuses and putting them up his bum?
I can't ever remember being obsessed with cactuses. Obviously, I'm obsessed with putting things up my bum. But I can't remember having a partial for cactuses.
Do you remember in the early days, we had, there was a podcast that we used to do little adverts for and they did them for us? What was it called? Trash Compactor Podcast?
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
And it always involved me saying things like, do you like slamming your cock between two bits of wood?
Yeah.
If you do, you'll enjoy the Trash Compactor Podcast.
Yeah.
And it just sort of escalated.
Yeah.
They don't do anymore, but that was real fun doing that. I really like that as well. next one from Gary Watson. Do you guys ever suffer from podcast fatigue? I think we kind of answered that one, Gaz. I don't, mate. I have to say, I really... and Gary's a great guest, actually. Really good guest, wasn't he?
Yeah.
When he came on. I don't. I haven't had it. No, I just really... I kind of get sick of a few things.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. I got a bit sick of people just coming on the show to pimp their podcast, pimp their Kickstarter at one point. But I've done... I just really look forward to talking to you guys, you know.
I think one of the secrets is we're trying to mix up all the topics and stuff we talk about. Like, when... One week we'll be talking about like vintage comics with someone, and then the next week we'll be talking about lettering. You know, it's not just talking about the same thing every time. And there'll be weeks that I know nothing about the guest, and so I'm a sponge for information. And some weeks, you know, I know this person, I've invited them on, and like everyone else learns something. Mm. That's what's good about it, mixing it up. It's not the same thing every time.
Well, usually what happens is Tony will get a guest and it's like, right, I've got this guest. I know what I'm talking about. Me and Vince are like, good, because we're fucking lost here. And then Tony has like technical issues and it's like, oh, right,
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
It's happened a couple of times.
Yeah.
Didn't they have Al Ewing? I talked to Al Ewing into coming on and then I got stuck at work.
Yeah.
I ended up recorded that one from my desk at work, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was like half an hour late or something, wasn't I?
I mean, one of the ones where we had that, and like Tony certainly had more experiences, when we had Jerome from when we talked about European comics, and that was purely because Tony had more of a background of I had only just started getting into them, and so had Dan and stuff.
Same here, yeah.
But the guest was such that it didn't matter, because it was almost like everyone learned at the same time then, and like he was one of our, you know, one of the best guests. And I know I've heard a lot of people sort of say, you know, I really love that show, and I learned a lot from it, and I'm reading a lot of European books. Yeah. So you know,
I'll tell you what, one I liked as well was Kirby. Now, I liked it because you guys weren't as knowledgeable about, or not, you weren't as big fans of Kirby, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because I'm in my late 30s and you're both in your late teens. And I put a lot of work into sort of research and that. We chose our guests carefully on that one, because I know Matt came on, Matt Harrower, didn't he? And he's a big Kirby fan. And we talked about that. And what we did before that is I sent you a few Kirby comics to read.
Yeah.
And I really liked the fact that it was sort of, we were sort of opening your eyes a bit to them, but you also had like some really good opinions of someone who's like new to an art style, which is something that's sort of embedded in my eyeballs for so long. And just, I was getting like a whole new sort of perspective on it from you two. And that was really good. Really enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was good. Yeah. When we kind of like got a topic and we all go away and kind of research
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
I feel like the episodes, some of the really strong episodes is one where we've gone away and we've worked on it for a couple of weeks, researched up and then got on top of it, like the Kirby one,
or like Barry Tomlinson, because we all read the annuals, didn't we, and stuff, and we're swapping panels backwards and forwards on the week leading up to it, you know. Or Scott Adkins, when we watched we got secret
Man.
Copies of Accident Man, didn't we, and we got to watch them. It's like, how good was that?
That was great.
Cool. Let's work with, so next. So Gary asked a few ones. A couple of them will, because we know we're running a bit short on time. But Gary's last one is, how many avocados do you get through in a week, Dan? Quite a few, I suspect. Is that right?
No, I don't. Don't touch him.
They're all up his ass.
Yeah. Not much room out there, to be honest.
It's one like Mary Poppins Eden. Handbag.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he's always got a double spare.
Sports bag Billy. That's an old school reference.
The one from Eden Evangelise McCulloch. McCulloch, I'm going to say. Who's a recent joiner to the Facebook page. Thanks, Eden. And posted quite a few things, actually. Really interesting stuff. Hi, guys. Love the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, what do you love about making comics? And what do you think makes a successful comic? I'm going to answer the last bit first. And I'm going to say, when she's asked, what do you think makes a successful comic? I'm going to give the answer of, if you think it's good and you love it, then to me it's a successful comic.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
all it should be.
I agree.
Yeah. Don't worry about how many it sells.
Yeah,
it's, no. Don't remember how many emails you get about it. If you love that comic and you're pleased with it,
if you're proud of it, then that's all that matters. Yeah. You should always create for yourself, I think.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, people will say, "Oh, what about if you're writing for a bigger company or something like that?" But you still, want to create a piece of work that you're proud of. You know, why would you put out?
I think you've got to think about everything as creator owned.
Yeah,
because you've got that. Otherwise, you're not really putting your heart and soul into it, are you? I think sometimes, So, like Dan Slott, his Spider-Man was his, wouldn't he? Like, said, like, I'm taking Spider-Man on there, or even Bendis, you know, I'm taking on Daredevil, you know, and all this sort of thing. And then when that's why you see that success is in the love of it, because they're like, all right, this is mine now. I'm doing this with it, you know. So, what do you guys love about making comics? What bit of it?
I just love stories. I love telling stories. And just seeing it all come together. And especially when you push past the point, because I think when anyone makes a comic, they will rarely, I would say never, but you never know. But that when you make a comic, there's always going to be a point where your confidence falters, where you're not quite sure. You're like, oh God, you know, this isn't as good as I thought. You know, there's always ups and downs, but if you keep pushing forward and put out that final piece, I mean, I'm always just chuffed as punch whenever I've got anything sort of, you know, self-published or, you know, certainly with Murder Road, that's a ups and downs, because I'm looking at other people's work and doubting my own, but then I'll look at my pages and think, oh, I'm really pleased with what I did there.
Definitely. Yeah, right, you should be.
And seeing it all come together is just great. It's just creating. That's what I'm all about, rather than anything else, I think.
Yeah, I'll make you right on that, mate, completely. That's pretty much what I've written, is seeing an idea in my head and writing it down and getting it onto that page and seeing it drawn and like collaborate, you know, connecting with an artist and that creating a comic. That's what I love about it.
Any final product that anyone's got out there, any printed comic, any web comic, anything, you be damn proud of that, because there is a battlefield of paragraph concepts, sketches that went nowhere. There are a million tales that never get past the first hurdle.
So there's a lot of people standing about in comic shops talking about the comic they're going to do that never sees light of day. And if you've done one, then that's what you should love about it. You've done it.
There's a thousand and one reasons not to do something and not to make a comic. It's getting it out there. You've won the battle in that regard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Getting up and doing it and creating.
It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. I mean, everyone's got different tastes, and it doesn't matter if some people don't like your book or, you know, they're not fans of it. There's going to be people who are. There is something for everyone, and you should. But above all, do it for yourself and be proud of it, and that shows in the work. That always shows in the work, I think.
Yeah, I think you try and make something to please everyone. You please no one.
Yeah,
really do.
Yeah.
Make sense. You would like to read and enjoy yourself, and you think, oh, I like this, and
it's really got something about you that you're excited about. Something about the comic you think, do you know what I mean? Yeah, definitely.
I mean, we're always going to be critical of our own work. Everything ever put out is almost like, oh, you always see the errors as soon as it's in print. But that's part of the journey of it.
Because then
that pushes you to make the next one perfect.
It's one of those things. Don't beat yourself up for the errors you make, but rather identify them and see how you can build on them and do better next time.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Don't beat yourself up. It's good, really good advice. Yeah. Sam's got a series of questions. Some of them have been asked already, actually, in some way or other. He asks, "Are you happy if one person, if just one person, reads it and is inspired by it?" Yeah, fuck you, I am.
Yeah.
I'm happy if I'm over the moon if one person's inspired by it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, completely. Do you want to earn some beer money and have a laugh, or do you just want to earn some beer money and have a laugh? Well, that's part of it, I suppose. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Like I said, it goes back to that. I want people to read the story and enjoy the story. That's kind of being a storyteller and making that connection. I feel like there's such a kind of weight to telling a story and earning that trust. I mean, people get really fucked off, rightly so, like when you have TV series or films that just absolutely drop the ball and you've invested so much into it.
Yeah.
And maybe it's different people do this, but certainly me, if I feel like I've been kind of, someone's done something very lazily, it really fucks me off. Really don't like it. You've invested time thinking, oh, you could have done this, could have done that, and then they just do something shite. It's real real letdown. So
Are you looking to be picked up by a publisher? It depends what the project is, I think, Sam, to be fair. Appreciate the question. It's sort of, some of them we are and some of them we ain't. You know, some of them it's not where I'm going for with that particular thing.
For instance,
and some of them, yes.
I like the Red Mask from Mars. I see that as being my thing that I just do for myself and hopefully put out some really quality product. But I've got some ideas for things that I'm possibly going to pitch to other people, you know.
Fair enough.
You know.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. He's asked a few more questions. Touched on them with our last few answers. Yeah, and one of them, I'll just read it out because it made me laugh. Is it just a better way to spend your evenings compared to your old hobby of whacking off? No, I combine both. I can combine both.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah, I've never stopped.
We've only got a couple left, actually. That's gone quick, isn't it? Second to last one is from Iqbal Ali, whose book we reviewed a few weeks ago, actually, and we met in London. Personally, I'm a process nut, so I'd love to hear about creative process as well as the technical process of making comics. Thanks again for the podcast. It really is awesome. Thanks, Iqbal. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. We've got some, I'm going to say, lads, we've got some creative process stuff coming up in the next few weeks.
Yes.
So keep your ears open. We probably, unless you guys had something you wanted to go into now, there's probably, there's plenty in the past, but there's certainly more coming up soon.
Yeah, there's always going to be process stuff on the schedule because, and that they're certainly some of the ones that we get, you know, the most feedback from. Just take, you know, the great Mike Stock and talk about lettering. Yeah. That, a lot of great feedback about that.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? Yeah, really did. Yeah.
So, that isn't going anywhere soon. We're not going to turn into a show that's constantly talking about the Marvel Cinematic movies. And, we're always going to be on about making comics. That's what it's all about.
So. And if you sign up to my mailer this week, I've taken a page of the script of Cockney Kung Fu from the last issue, and I've broken down how I wrote it and what I came out with at the end after I gave it to Nick, because it was interesting to me that, just from a process point of view, because I wrote it before I knew Nick.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of discussions and to and fro's about how he changed it slightly and gives it a different sort of, so I've put the script down, but I've annotated it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Nice.
It's just a little bit of an exercise. So it's the last page of what happens in issue one, and it explains a little bit about where we're going with it and the sort of vibe and stuff. Yeah, which I always like to read that stuff. So I've always thought just before issue two comes out, it's something I'd do. So have a look at that.
We were discussing that on the group, and we were saying, like, with the rising costs of print, putting that extra back matter material does fucking add up. But, like, if you can produce it, people love seeing it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Last one from Kevin Cooling. Thanks for the review, by the way, Kevin, this week. Our first review of issue two. Yeah. Kev gave a really thoughtful... and he's a listener, and we're friends with Kevin. He's a good guy, and he gave a really thoughtful review of issue one. So he was really the only person we sent an issue out to without them asking us first. We took the decision this time to, if you want a copy to review, just email us, because we sent so many out last time, and as is the common with all reviews, you know, you only get sort of what 5-10% of the ones you send out. I think, you know, and I've seen this from the other side, but the a really thoughtful review. So thanks a lot, Kevin. Really kind of you.
Cheers, Kev.
His question is, I know we Brits don't like to talk about the vulgar topic of money, but I'd be really interested to hear about typical printing costs, page rates for collaborators, costs of tabling at conventions, etc. So should we take them separately? So Printing, you know, Vince, because you manage our
manage.
you're in charge of the sort of Scrooge McDuck basement full of camera. Yeah. So what was our price for? Was it 300 on the new issue? Wasn't it? So black and white interiors, color cover.
Yeah, black and white interiors, color cover with the stock. Oh, I want to get it right now, but it's got like a matte laminate cover. It's all
it
very
went
high
up
quality,
slightly, didn't it? Because the paper prices.
And you have to bear in mind paper prices, and this is something that your printers can't do anything about. You know,
yeah.
when we got the issue one printed, we got it for a song. I mean, obviously we ordered more. And when you order more, the individual issue price goes down. It's just natural.
I think, yeah. Being a bit skeptical, the old Brexit thing, we love talking about that.
Yeah.
That will affect paper prices negatively because yes. Most of it comes from Europe, the UK stock, so it will go up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now,
right. Good news.
Great news. Hot pickers.
Yeah.
Get your comics printed now.
Yeah. I mean, for the. I almost don't want to talk too much about what the individual issue.
I would suggest if you've got a project in mind, you can contact. There's a number of great printers out there.
Completely.
And discuss what you've got and the kind of budget you're looking for, what kind of paper you're looking at. I mean, they don't do the cheapest chips newsprint paper, but if you're trying to keep the cost down or make a quality product, the best thing is to talk to the printer.
Yeah,
and get it back and forth going.
Communication is
very approachable.
You've got an idea of what you want, let them know because they will do whatever they can to service that. And I mean, prices—it's not a negotiation game. You can't, you know, because printers can't afford to. You know, you're not haggling with someone.
Yeah, very tight margins.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Because I can remember I was talking to Rich about book two being printed, and. I had to drop 4 pages because it was just the price was just too much to what I mean. Even now, the unit cost on Vanguard, I've got to try and get that down somehow because it's a lot. It's a lot of money because the more you order, the cheaper it gets. So I don't want to be ended up with boxes and boxes of books that I can't sell.
Yeah.
So it's a gambling.
And I think with the rise in printing prices, you are going to see more individual issues. I mean, we're seeing an awful lot of them anyway, but more individual issues going to Kickstarter to get those print costs. Because I think it's... I mean, we self-funded our issues by the sales of merch and other issues and stuff. That's what we're, doing.
We put in a few quid ourselves But there's three of us funding a comic, one single comic, isn't there? You know, three individual
not too bad.
Sort of earning households. Yeah, yeah. So that's the way we do it.
Because it's a logistic issue as well. With if we run a Kickstarter, one of us has to run it.
Yeah.
And then all the comics have to be fucking sent out by that one person. So essentially one person's doing
Kickstarter is your way of getting it funded, do your research. Same as when you talk to printers. Ask as many questions as you can. Because if they answer all those questions and give you good service, you're going to go back to them. It's as simple as that. It's not a huge market for comic. You know, there's not loads and loads of comics printers everywhere, especially high quality ones. So you know, you want to keep that repeat business, and also bear in mind the difference between full color artwork and black and white. There's a reason our issue is black and white. Obviously, we can do different things with the artwork and it's nice and stuff, but the cost is a massive difference.
Mm. Yeah.
So bear that in mind.
The other thing as well is we self-funded issue one. We sold enough issue ones to print issue two.
Yeah.
And we also have money beyond that that will go to the printing of issue three.
Yeah.
So think about funding, thinking of pricing your comic enough so it pays for the print costs itself, but also funds the printing of the following issue.
Yeah.
That's what you've got to think about as well. Yeah.
It's regarding the cost of cons, that can rack up very quickly.
Yeah.
If you factor in travel, staying, your food, and that's just aside from the table cost. I mean, if you
think about a few comp issues as well, because for example, the couple of reviewers will get a free issue maybe, or for example, I gave, because I've collaborated with Nick got a set number of issues per the print run to sell himself.
Yeah.
So you got to think about that in advance when you're pricing up everything, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it can get,
I mean, this,
can get
could, this could be a bigger topic in itself for its own show. So,
should we just cover the next bit, which is page rates for collaborators? So this is something I deal with all the time.
Yeah.
So it used to be when I was started off in the small press in the 90s, you'd have a mate, he'd be able to draw or he'd be able to write, and you'd make a comic and you'd sell it, and there was no page rates.
Yeah.
Now we're a much more organised and sort of regimented group of people, all who are a lot of writers competing to get the right artist. I think that is quite common these days. So we've seen little dramas spike up, you know, necessarily and unnecessarily over the years. And I think you have to pay a reasonably decent page rate.
Yeah.
I'll be quite open about this. I'm paying Nick 50 quid a page. Mm. And also some money on top of that for the lettering. To me, that's a good enough amount of money. I mean, Nick's into it. Nick's very invested in it, and we're pals.
Yeah.
But I think that's a decent rate for a guy whose art is fucking outstanding.
Yeah,
I've heard some people pay as little as £10 a page, and I think that's not enough. Yeah.
It's one of those things. I feel like the kind of the market will find its own level, and artists have kind of got to be aware of their worth. I'm constantly undercharging. I should really charge more for the amount of time I put on pages, but then I consider it's not so much of a business as more of a hobby, and making a few quid is great.
Yeah.
But only get paid a few quid to draw comics.
And I'm self-financing that. The payment to Nick is not coming out of the back end of the book. Yeah. 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 You got to think about that as well. There's loads of bits to think about around this sort of thing. You really need to lay it out maybe from a little bit of a contractual point of view, but think about what you're going to do before you start. And Nick and I had a lot of chats about how much and, you know, I was going to pay him different rates per page depending on how complicated it was, and he quite sensibly said, "That's just going to confuse us, dude." And I said, "No, you're right, man. Let's just keep it as a certain rate."
From an artist perspective as well, your page rates are going to go up the more confidence you get and the better you get and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
and even in the small press field, you're going to sell a comic based on the artist. I mean, there's artists out there like, you know, who are popular artists, and will sell a book on their name. it sort of small press conventions and stuff. Yeah,
it's definitely the punch in the workout as well, and the say for him, pulled Chris Imber. He's got a big social media presence. The gallery of work's still there. Everyone can look and see it. There's a ton of shit there.
Yeah,
and so when you get him on the art duties of your book, or even a cover or print, people buy into that, and then you're also kind of getting the Chris Imber fans.
Yeah.
In on the,
yeah,
the
going to quote. I was going to quote Tilly Walden. She's the same, isn't she? She's got a huge following. If you wrote something that she did the art on, you know, it would do really well.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, So there you go.
There you go.
Good. Interesting question, Kev. That's almost an episode in itself, to be fair. Really good. There you go, gents. That's all the questions.
Whoa.
Wowza.
Yeah. That was right, wasn't it?
Yeah. We haven't had a Q&A episode in quite some time. So, and I think this has been our most successful yet.
Yeah.
Don't you think? I think in terms of feedback, we know our audience to go to. And thank you so much for all the questions, folks.
Yes.
We really appreciate that.
And thanks for the well wishes as well.
Yes.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Really nice, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as always, we will state that these are our opinions, and you know, based on our experiences or what we think. Don't take us as law. As always, take this and also find out for yourself. That's basically what it is.
They're very subjective. Like, we only see it from certain angles, same as Vince and Tony, and we've had our experiences, and everyone has different ones. So
So there you go. So thank you for all the questions. Do we have any shout outs this week, gents?
Did you want to do the competition first?
Oh. Yes, we have a sexy sexy little competition.
We do. Yes. I was speaking to Nobrow this week and told them it's our 150th, and they've kindly donated a copy of Dead India, which is not out yet. Dead India, The Watcher's Test by Hamish Steele. Watch this space. He's going to be at a convention soon with me. Now, it comes out, I think, the 1st of June, so you might be able to get it early if you get your answer in quickly enough. The competition is now today or this week. Deadpool 2 came out. We've all seen it, haven't we, gents?
Yes.
Yeah.
And we all had a good time. Now, Deadpool 2 being a sequel to the highly successful Deadpool movie from a few years ago, and it features the characters from X-Force, which we're also big fans of. It also features a couple of surprise characters who we won't ruin on this podcast. But my question to you is, I went and saw Deadpool this morning. What did I have for lunch afterwards? It's three choices. Number one, cheese and pickle sandwiches. Number two, just a packet of plain crisps. Or number three, veggie chili.
Oh.
Now, if you write in, you'll get a copy of Dead India.
Yep. If you send your answers to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, when shall we announce it? Is this probably not on our next show? Because we're recording that early.
Oh, yeah, we are, aren't we?
Yeah. So episode 152, should we say?
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah. So you got a bit of time to send your answers in, but like I say, tony.awesomecomicpod@gmail.com, and you could potentially win a copy of Noah Brown's Dead India. There you go.
Thank you, Zoe, for donating the books. Very kind of you.
Yes.
And shout out to Zoe, who's now back. She wasn't very well, but she's back now. Say hello. Good. That's it. So I've got some shout outs. You got any, guys?
I will just say Lawgiver.
Yes.
Which is this coming Saturday the 25th?
Is it
the Mercure Holland Hotel? Is that?
No, it's the Doubletree by Hilton in Bristol.
Doubletree Hilton, that's the one. I was thinking of Sice, that's what I was thinking of.
Oh, you were,
Yeah, Lawgiver, the Dread Convention, which is happening this Saturday. We're going to be there.
We'll be passes.
Yeah, legit to quit.
Yeah.
But there's a great lineup of 2000 AD guests and some people you may have heard on this show before.
Yeah.
We're going to wander around and possibly interview a few people. We'll see if we can get some audio for a future show. I've never been to Lawgiver.
I never have either. I tried to go a couple of years ago and I got called back to work, so I didn't end up going.
We've talked about it a few times on this show and we've heard good things. So if you're going to be there, then come and say hello. And you never know. That's so where was it again? Doubletree Hilton in Bristol, isn't it?
It's the one. Yeah, on the 25th. Yeah.
Is it MK at MK Lawgiver on Twitter?
MK is it Lawgiver4? Something like that, isn't it?
Go get your tickets online just to come and say hello to us. That's what you need.
You'll be you like Rogue Trooper, don't you?
So, yeah. Yeah, I do like Rogue Trooper.
I've got a couple. Kev Brett, get well soon, mate. He's got a torn ligament in his shoulder.
Oh, no.
Get well soon, dude.
Yeah. Slang Pictorial 3, which comes out the same day as us at Sice. I got to see the preview of it yesterday from Nick Prolix. Fuck me, it's good. So good. If you want to see some images of it, go to neverrunanything.blogspot.co.uk. There's an article on there, which I was really pleased when Nick wrote back and said you've really encapsulated it, unlike anyone else has so far. It's a really clever book. It's clever beyond it being a newspaper strip. It really gets into the dirt of London and into the characters in it. It's really good. And my last one is I beta read the new book from Pat Mills this week. Fucking brilliant. That's all I can say about it at the moment because I don't think he's put out there what it is yet. But watch for the next release from Pat and Lisa at Millsverse. Really good stuff. Nice. Yeah, really good. There you go.
Nice.
Cool.
Have you got any shout outs, Dan?
No.
now we're almost running a bit long this week, so we're gonna have to be short, sharp and sexy with the reviews.
Yeah.
I say reviews, they're recommendations. So who wants to go first this week?
You go first, Fee.
Yeah.
Okay, this one I got a couple of weeks ago, a little anthology book, as we've been speaking about them, and done by a friend of the show. You may know this one. I don't know how many of you got out there have read it. It is Alfie Gallagher's Debris.
Oh, did you get that? Did you? Nice. That's a taste. I forgot to get that.
I totally missed that.
Yep. It is well worth your attention. Now, it says on the back, featuring artwork by Alfie Gallagher, and it's got stories by Ryan K. Lindsay, Lee Robson, Martin Hayes, and Fraser Campbell. Colours by Ellie Wright, Chris O'Halloran. I probably murdered
that's right.
that. Yeah. Fiona Farrell. And lettering by Bram Meehan. Now, it's a 40-page book in total, full colour. Like I say, there's five stories in total. We've got the Before the Chernobyl Job, which is Ryan K. Lindsay's tale. How Long, which is Lee Robson. Wolves, by Alfie himself. He's a writer and artist. And one of the images from Wolves, I believe, is Alfie's Twitter picture at the moment.
Oh, okay. I know one, yeah.
The Corner of Some Foreign Field, which is by Martin Hayes. And Charlie's Last Nerve, which is Fraser Campbell. Anyone who's seen Alfie's work will know that this is just quality through and through. Absolutely amazing. The stories go from sci-fi to strange, like dreamlike supernatural sort of stuff. It's hard to pick a favorite. I absolutely just sometimes with anthologies they're kind of up and down, but this is such a consistent book all the way through. Even though the stories are very varied and the different writers' voices, etc. I just loved every single story in it. It was just great. Awesome. I mean, I don't know whether this was a book that Alfie decided he wanted to put together some stories and then reached out to, you know, writers and stuff that he's worked with before. I believe there's a bit in the back that he talks about the making of, etc. But the stories themselves, all fantastic. I mean, one of the ones that completely caught me unawares was The Corner of Some Foreign Field, doesn't go where you think it's going to go. Like a German warplane sort of crashes in the middle of a rural landscape, and there's all the nature around him kind of interact with him in a quite a dark and macabre way, which is like Tales from the Unexpected on crack. That's kind of like what this book is. You got a cover where you've got a giant battle between what looks like a masked wrestler fighting a praying mantis, and it's like a Godzilla-like fight amongst this city landscape, which just shows like Alfie's just grasp of like attention to detail and perspective and everything, and just fun. And these are books that are stories that are thought-provoking. And like I say, I love an anthology that changes the tempo, that changes the pace and the flavour of stories. And yeah, like The Chernobyl Job was very much a thought-provoking science fiction tale that immediately switched tack with the next story, How Long, which was a very dark, almost a Bonnie and Clyde type story that takes a twist that you wouldn't expect, short and sharp and to the point. You just have to see it for yourself, I think. We're good friends with Alfie anyway.
Yeah.
And this sort of came out of the blue, and it came at a point where I put the pause button on the Kickstarter pledges. But then when I saw Alfie's book pop up,
sucked you back in.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And it intrigued me that it was all, you know, there's a consistency because Alfie's doing all the artwork for it. That intrigued me, because you don't necessarily see that with anthologies, do it? Like one artist getting a lot of writers on board. It was quite a unique sort of thing. Brilliant stuff. I mean, you follow Alfie on Twitter. Let's make sure I get it right. He says, looking at the book here now. Now, you can get Alfie at... Where's his flipping... there we go, Alfie Gallagher. Well, I suppose that's...
Ah, there you go.
Yes, fair enough. And now, if you want to get copies of his stuff, you can go to etsy.com/shop/AlfieMan. He's got a couple of other shops, but why not try Etsy? We don't normally give a shout-out to Etsy on this show. He's got loads of stuff on there, and we've talked about many of his books before, but Debris is an absolute home run. So if you see him at any shows, definitely pick this up. He's got a lovely quality finish as well. Matte laminate cover, full colour... sort of interiors. It's beautiful stuff. It's actually an anthology I'll reread. How often can you say that?
Yeah.
So definitely, Debris is my recommendation. Highly recommended. And definitely check it out. There you go, that's mine.
Cool.
Who's next?
Dan? I've been reading a few odds and sods with comics, but the one thing that's kept me laughing all week is rereading some old collections of Conan the Barbarian. The original stuff written by Robert E. Howard is fucking great. It's just I don't know if you kind of it's one of those things a lot of people sort of don't actually read the original source material to Conan. But it's really it's so well done. It's really just pulp, swords and sandals, it's and fighting and wenches. And it's kind of like Conan's relatively not simplistic character, but like he's kind of like the alpha male, as it were, and he gets put in these kind of situations. There's a lot of political upheaval going back and forth, and he's just like a fucking force of nature that goes through wrecking shit. It's really fun to read, and Robert E. Howard's descriptions of Conan come off as like a love letter to the character. It's very interesting. But
for me, I read all the Robert E. Howard stuff, and then I read, because the collections I was reading had the L. Sprague de Camp, and is it Lynn Carter, I think, were doing them as well.
Right, yeah.
And they were sort of, he handed the mantle on to them, and I think they wrote it in the 60s and 70s, I'm going to say.
Okay.
And then since then, there's been some other novels that have come out, which haven't anywhere near been as strong. But I think Conan works best for me in those like little short stories you get.
Oh, God,
you know?
Yeah. Often he's not the main character.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see it from his point of view. There'd be other people, and Conan's there doing his thing. But it's very, very interesting. Great little reads.
Oh, cool.
You can pick them up, like pulp books, for like a few quid.
Yeah.
I've got like given a second hand copy by my mate, and all the pages are fucking turning yellow.
Yeah.
Nice. But that's not free rage. it's kind of, the pages are really yellow, and it's kind of, I don't think you have too many more years left in that before it starts perishing.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's how paperback should be.
Yeah. I should have started this review by saying, "Let me tell you the days of our adventure," but I didn't think fast enough on my feet.
Next time,
and now he's Aquaman. Look,
pardon.
And now he's Aquaman.
Oh, God,
that kind of film's not good.
Couldn't fucking watch that through. I think I got about 20 minutes in, and I was like, "No, this is not."
Yeah,
it's not Conan.
No.
Well, speaking of films, are you done, Dan, or did you want
to? No, that's it. Yeah.
Speaking of films, perhaps you guys could tell me what the greatest movie dynasty is of all time. Series of movies. What's the greatest movies? The best made. The greatest movies of all time. Series of movies.
Are you going to talk about the Puppet Master?
Yes, exactly.
I had a horrible feeling.
Police Academy, obviously, but that's the unspoken.
Yeah, some people say Godfather. Fuck them.
They obviously haven't seen Citizens on Patrol. Mission to Moscow. Oh, God.
So Puppet Master is a comic, but it comes from a series of movies that came out from the magnificent Full Moon Features.
Yeah.
You guys name any of the other movies they made.
Oh, Full Moon.
Doll Man,
yes.
Yes, good man. Yeah.
Did they also make The Ginger Dead Man?
Ginger Dead Man, yeah, that's another classic. There's a number of them. Okay. Versus the Evil Bong.
Yeah. Castle Freak? Did they make Castle Freak?
They did. That's actually quite good. That's by the geezer who did Reanimator.
Yeah, Stuart Gordon, yeah.
That's him, yeah. Trancers. They didn't make the first one, but they made the next eight or whatever. Subspeech. Subspecies, other classic series. Cannibal Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death. That's a class film. Slave Girls from Beyond Infinity. Dr. Mordred, which actually started out as a Doctor Strange movie. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
You can clearly tell that when you watch that.
Yeah. Some of the greatest movies ever made. So there's 13 of these, as I understand it, Puppet Master. I've only watched the first six. But they... I feel a bit embarrassed by that. The movie came out in 1989, and though all those movies were sort of definite, sort of solid regulars on the blockbuster shelves, weren't they? So I thought it was about time we talked about the comics that relate to this. So, Beware the Toys of Andre Toulon. Can you name any of the puppets that feature?
Drillhead, is there one?
Tunneler. But that's the one you're thinking. We've sort of got a drill on his head. Jester, who's the one whose sort of face spins round. Pinhead,
the one with the claw hooks on his hands, with a white face.
Blade, yeah. You got Leech Woman, that leeches come out of her mouth and people eat them. Not the easiest one way to kill someone.
No.
Six Shooter, he's quite a good one. Horrible Little Vicious Bastards. Do you know what I mean? Just real sort of horrible books. You've got characters in these books, but it's published by Action Lab. I know there's been a couple of other versions of it, but this series I'm talking about came from Action Lab. Yeah. They're also adapting some other Full Moon properties, which I know you sent me recently, Vince, didn't you? So you got to watch this. Yeah. I think one is Dollman Kills the Whole Full Moon Universe, or something like that, I think it's called.
Yep. Yeah.
It looks amazing.
Each issue of that, Dollman will kill a different character from the Full Moon Studios universe. It's the greatest idea I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's amazing. Tom Thompson cannot be killed. He is the hardest bloke in the world, isn't he? Let's face it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So there's 20 issues. There's a 3-issue mini called Curtain Call, and there's a Halloween special. I'm sort of focusing mostly on Volume 1, which is called The Offering. Written by Sean Gabanin, art by Michael DeSacco, colours by Jan Perelet. It's $3.99 on Comixology at the moment, and the first volume collects the first 3 issues of the ongoing series. It starts out with that sort of classic story of a group of friends get to the abandoned Bodega Bay Inn, which is the big hotel, which features in quite a lot of the movies, and they're thinking of using it as a party spot, and they get and it starts off with them getting there. So they sort of arrive, and slowly, as they sort of wander about the hotel, they're getting attacked by the dolls. The hotel is a kind of almost like a semi-spiritual place where the locals are dropping off actual dolls whenever something bad comes and they want a good bit of karma. Because of all the legends that surround this hotel, the locals, the weird locals, are actually dropping off normal dolls, or non-animated dolls, as sort of little things, as little bits of good luck. But amongst them all are these horrible little bastards who go around murdering some people. One of the friends in the group begins to tell the history of André Toulon, and two of the other teenagers are a bit bored. So, and I to quote, they go off to find somewhere to fuck. So they find this sort of secluded room, and as they're kissing, one of them starts coughing, and you're aware that Tunneler has drilled through the back of his head and is drilled through their open kissing mouths through the back of the neck of the woman. It is pretty fucking gruesome, you know, it really is. It goes straight away to violent and creepy, you know, it combined in one moment. There's no sort of in the shadows, you know, there's none of that sort of issues. Yeah. They just go straight for it. In fact, I think the writer is quite well known for being well acquainted and retelling in canon stories that relate to these characters. There is a history to them from the Second World War onwards and all this sort of thing. Things are not quite what they seem. There's a little tweak in the story where you go, okay, I didn't quite expect that. It will creep you out. It totally creeped me out. It was actually surprisingly satisfying as a comic. You see these things in the shelf, don't you think, that can't be any good? That's a load of bullshit. Yeah. They paid someone fucking 20 quid a page to do that. But yeah, it's actually surprisingly really good. I was actually really impressed with it. I thought I'll read that because I'm a freak and I like watching terrible films. And I'll read that. But it actually turned out to be good. The second volume, let me just recount the opening of the second volume, and it'll give you a feel of what it's like. So I really like this scene. A man's cooking a burger in a kitchen, and the images focus on this thing he's cooking. He's cooking a burger, and he puts it into a bun with the lettuce and the tomato, and he picks it up, and he's clearly like home late from work, and he's eating this burger, and he's saying, "Oh, that's good." And as he walks into his office / living room, standing on top of one of the desks is Blade, just standing there staring at him. Now, for those that don't know Blade, he's got a knife in one hand, and his other hand is a hook. And the man looks at him and he says, "You can't be here." That's a sort of slight surprise, because it's a strange reaction to seeing this sort of killer doll just out sort of blinking at him. And he jumps up at this man's face. He uses his hook to hook into the lower lip of his eyeball. You know where your eyeball, you know, hooks into that and swings on his eyeball and slashes his throat with his blade. Just how fucking brutal is that as an opening 2-page comic? And as he fucking falls to the ground, Blade sits on his chin and looks at him as he dies on the floor. Fucking hell, how good is that? How well scripted is that sort of sequence? Yeah. And just the fact that he says you can't be here leads into the rest of the story, where you discover that the man who's eating the sandwich used to be Blade. So a witch has taken his spirit out of his body and put it into a real human body. And so Blade should not be there, because Blade's this sort of doll in the cupboard. and it just sort of ups the sort of creep factor of it. It's really, really well written, really well.
Nice.
You know, absolutely brilliant. And they're cheap little volumes, $3.99 for three comics in a volume with a load of like, back matter and alternate covers, a little bit of history and all that sort of thing. If you go onto YouTube on online, you can see loads of clips and, you know, interviews with the creators and stuff like that, you know.
I think later on this year there's going to be a lot of talk about Puppet Master with the new film that's coming out.
Yeah, you sent me the image of that, didn't you?
Yeah. Which is, which is Puppet Master, The Littlest Reich. And if that sounds un-PC, the early word is it's properly over the top. It's a gore fest, but hilarious, and it's fully self-aware of what it is. But it's written by. Have you seen the films Brawl in Cell Block 99?
Yeah,
yeah.
Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah,
it's the guy that wrote and directed those has written The Puppet Master. The Littlest Reich.
Fucking hell.
Yep.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, and it's a Puppet Master with a budget.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, it takes back those sort of, you know, certain horror movies now are a little bit of homogenized, aren't they? It's the same old thing again and again, isn't it? But it took me back to those times when you had a movie studio that was kind of like off on its own somewhere and were just doing these, they obviously like work in a studio thinking, how can we make this even more horrible?
Yeah.
Even more creepy. Even more fucking nutty.
Yeah,
you know, and they go back. Puppet Master 2, I dare you not to watch that and not be creeped out. There's one character in it that's just fucking astoundingly unpleasant. You know, and you think, how would they get away with that now? Yeah. He's this sort of bandaged rapist who sort of wanders around threatening to rape women. It's just like the most fucking bizarre thing.
Oh,
but these are I actually genuinely think if you like, I know Dan Charlie, for example, I bet a few quid he'll like this.
Yeah.
There's a few horror fans out there who will love this series. It's really well done. And you're right, it's very self-knowing, but it's creepy and horrific as well at the same time.
So and the Action Lab guys, they know what they're doing. They put out quality product. Yeah, they're not just churning out just tie-ins. Yeah. These are guys who probably know and love the series.
Oh, they love it. Nice. There's a Trancers comic, there's a subspecies, there's a Ginger Dead Man. There's a few different ones. They're a little bit varying in quality, but I'd say this is a good starting point, this one. Yeah.
Awesome.
There you go. That's my one.
Awesome.
Cool.
Now, what a show. Hey, folks.
Yeah.
What 150 we gave you. I can't remember anything I've said over the past 2 hours.
Me neither.
I'm hanging out my arse now.
Yeah, I don't actually think I said anything of any worth. So, So let us know what you thought of the show, because we seriously don't know what we've just said. If we said something that made you happy or offended you, then let us know about it. And you can do that by emailing us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Send your competition entries to win that sexy prize to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Go on Twitter, follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. Well, sometimes we just post up a GIF. We have our Kickstarter call out Thursday, which I forgot about last Thursday. So
apologies. Oh, I retweeted a few. Yeah, we had a few, didn't we?
Yeah, I retweeted a few.
Yeah, so get in touch with us if you have a comic Kickstarter at the moment on Thursdays. Go to Facebook, if you do Facebook. I know a lot of creators and comic fans do. Go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. This show would not be possible without the fine people who are part of the group Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
God bless every single one of you who sent us a question. We truly appreciate it. And, thank you for listening, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe. That's the thing I need to start telling people to do. Subscribe. I've started doing that with podcasts that I listen to, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Helps get the word out. Leave us a nice review. Tell your friends about us. Tell your mum about us.
Your mum knows. Your mum knows
just,
all about it.
Yeah, just watch yourself. Just watch yourself. Now, if you listen to us on a network, for instance, we truly appreciate it. Whether it be Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What are the networks we on, Tony?
Podlabia.
Oh, my God.
I had to go back to an old reserve one because you used Pod Prison Pocket.
And that's what you've got in the reserve.
My little reserve back.
Jesus.
Just an anatomical statement. There's nothing wrong with it.
All right, okay. Well, not if it's a pod network. It's something else entirely then. Anyway, wherever you listen to us, thank you very much. And stay tuned because, you know, for the next 150. If we make it.
We will,
even if we're just riddled with heroin addictions and gambling debts.
You mean? Yeah.
I thought Dan was going to say something then. What were you going to say, Butcher?
I said, what do you mean if?
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Join us next week where you'll find out what else Dan's put up his bum.
Yeah.
Anyway, where can people follow find us online, etc.? Tony?
Ezo, yes, on Twitter, E-Z-O-H-Y-Z. And there's five things gone up this week on neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk. There you go.
Nice. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. It's nice. Starting back up next month.
Yes, yeah. Yes. We'll make a big song. As long as I get
the script done, I'm fucking struggling a bit with it.
Oh, so. I saw you struggling with that. Yeah.
We'll get you through it. We'll give you a back massage.
Yeah.
What?
Back sack. No.
Front massage.
Nope. You can find me on Twitter at Just Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmouse.com. Thank you very much for sticking with us this evening and for all the other episodes. Plenty more to come. So thank you very much for listening.
I make one shout out as well?
Okay. Okay. So a schedule just means nothing to you, does it?
The Awesome Comic Pod issue 2, as soon as that's available online, we'll be letting you know, which will be the same day as it's on sale in Cardiff.
2nd of June.
Yes.
From 10 o'clock in the morning, it will be available to buy.
Yes. Yep. There you go. Anyone who wants to know.
Internationally.
Because we've got the printed copies and it's all ready to go.
And we've got the digital.
Oh, we've got everything for you. Ooh. Ooh. What do you want, baby? We've got it. Oh, God. This is just getting weird. And I'm not getting paid for this. Anyway, thank you for listening. And from Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of cool comics. Look forward to the next 150 episodes. And as always, what do?
They got to stay awesome.
Yeah. Or just give up on Tony joining in. See ya.
See ya.